fill your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, I'm as bad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
They don't want to abolish government. I simply want to reduce it to the size where I can drag it into the bathroom and drown it in the bathtub.
You bet I cut the taxes at the top.
How dare you? How dare you? Go ahead. Make my day.
The Rick Smith Show starts now.
And welcome, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, lovers of freedom, fairness, and democracy, truth, justice, the American way. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks for being here tonight on the big program. Pennsylvania State Representative Joe Preston is going to be here talking about the theft in the middle of the night, the thieves who stole the right to the ballot box. These Republicans who, you know, these less intrusive small government types who want to use the full force of the government to steal your right to the ballot box. Joe Preston's going to be here talking about what happened last night. While most of us were in, while a good many people were in bed, the Republicans stole a good number of folks' right to vote. We'll also talk a little bit about the budget. Which again, you know, Sunday they're going to have a special rolling out party, and it's amazing how they do these things, hoping nobody pays attention. In the second hour, we're going to talk with our friend Terrence Heath from the Campaign for America's Future. It is our Future Friday. We're going to talk about the Walmart decision, and you know, talk about jobs. You know, as we move forward, all of the things that are going on are about creating jobs, getting people back to work, getting people paying taxes into the coffers so that maybe all of this deficit and debt talk doesn't go so far. Maybe we don't have to wait for D-Day. We're also going to take your calls, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Also, remember, check out the website at therickSmithShow.com, and you can email me during the show or anytime at rick@therickSmithShow.com. Well, welcome to Command Central as we attempt to navigate through the latest Republican hostage crisis. The countdown to default, T-minus 39 days. August 2nd is default day. And, you know, the reports came out today that the big walkout we talked about yesterday, the moment of disgust where Eric Cantor could just take it no longer, was staged. They planned it. And again, you know, you look at this and you go, at some point, don't you have to realize that what's in front of you is real, that these people don't give a rat's behind about this country. The scorched earth crisis mongers want a global collapse. Get it? They have been planning that exit for weeks. For weeks. And they act like, oh, I could take it no more. And this is what Democrats need to realize, and we talked about this a little bit last night. You can't deal with terrorists. These are economic terrorists. They want to screw the American working class. They want to steal from granny. They want to steal food from the mouths of children. I don't care what they say with their Christian, oh, my goodness, I'm such a wonderful God-fearing Christian. You're a... Are you kidding me? And the reality is you cannot have a rational conversation with a petulant, irresponsible, self-indulged, reckless billionaire puppet. Just cannot happen. Now they're saying, oh, well, you know, John Boehner and the president, they're going to have to work this out. And, you know, the Democrats are going to have to get off of their tax our billionaire friends kick. We're not going to tax our billionaires, no! So the president and the vice president, evidently on Monday, are going to have meetings with separately with each of the Democratic Party people and the Republican Party people in the hopes of restarting the budget talks. You know, after this big charade, after this planned exit. Why did they do all this? Well, because the Democrats were saying, look, we need to get rid of some of these tax deductions. We need to get rid of certain credits, you know, for people making over $500,000 a year. You know, maybe we need, and they're not even talking about scaling back the Bush tax cuts yet. They're saying, look, you know, we need to shared sacrifice. We need to all be in this together. And you remember hearing that? Maybe we've heard that once or twice before. We're all in this together. Shared sacrifice. And what happened? You got the Republicans who said, hell no. We're gutting what's left of that social safety net, whether you like it or not. You got these other people out there saying, well, we need to keep the, you know, the oil subsidies for the big oil companies because it's going to create jobs. Robert Dold, Republican representative, said, we need to keep those subsidies. And the Republican Party as a whole said, we need to keep our billionaire friends happy. But that Social Security, that Medicare, that Medicaid, let's get rid of that. Let's do away with it. Let's chop it off at the ankles. Block grants, yeah! And now we see New Jersey Governor Chris Christie and other state lawmakers who are around him. They're refusing to extend the state's millionaire income tax surcharge. We're not going to keep the tax on those folks making over $750,000 a year. No, we're not going to do that. In fact, we're going to let it go, and we're going to give them $4,800 back because that's what they're going to get back because of this minor tax. What's going to happen though? Those school teachers, you know, those folks who make a reasonable living. Well, you're going to get fired, and you're going to have to make up the difference. And you're going to have to take a pay cut. And you're going to have to, oddly enough, pay the exact same amount that we're handing to the millionaire class in health care cuts, in wage freezes. It's amazing. It's amazing how this stuff just works out to where there's this massive shift. And you know what? T-Twits, I'm with you. Taxed enough already. Working class people are taxed enough already. We need to be looking at the millionaire class and saying, you know what? How about sharing in the sacrifice? You could do probably without an extra slice of cheese on your hamburger because the rest of the people don't even have hamburger. And this really bizarre mantra that the right keeps throwing out that, but Rick, we need to give these tax cuts to these wealthy people because they create jobs. Out of the benevolence of their heart, out of the goodness of their fiber, oh, they're wonderful human beings. They care so much about society. They're gonna hire you unwashed masses. They're gonna hire the rabble. Haven't seen it yet, but you know, we still got another 30 years. It's been 30 years since we've been doing it. Hasn't worked then. So there's this new study out by the folks at Penn State. The Northeast Regional Center for Rural Development at Penn State, they have shown that lower taxes are statistically insignificant when you look at a state's economic performance. When you're looking at the performance of the state, you know, lower taxes really doesn't do it. And that they keep talking about targeted tax incentives and financial assistance, as we're doing it now, are actually more likely to harm growth and income equality. They go on to say, although our results are preliminary suggestive, they indicate that lower taxes across the broad economy and the use of tax incentives and financial assistance do not stimulate state economies. Several states, you know, we're talking about more tax cuts. We're talking about more handouts. We're talking about a whole bunch of stuff as a way to grow the economy, not working. You know what businesses need? Business need products. They need people buying those products. They need demand. They need government to say, you know what? We need a road. We need a bridge. We need that big building. We need health care. We need a lot of things. Provide it. And we keep hearing over and over, well, you know, we got to cut taxes like Reagan did. Got to cut taxes like Reagan did. The only problem is, while Reagan was president 7 of the 8 years, he actually raised taxes. But the radical right, the revisionists, will never tell you that. 7 of the 8 years, he did raise taxes. And Bruce Bartlett, who was in his cabinet at the time, he wrote a piece this week saying, quote, it would be hard to find an economic forecast that was more wrong in every respect than what the Republicans are putting out right now. This whole idea of lower taxes, this whole idea of smaller government, firing thousands of government workers, it's brain dead. He writes, looking at real gross domestic product, it grew 4.5% in 1983 and 7.2% in 84. An exceptionally strong performance. The stock market had one of the best years ever in 1983. Both the Dow Jones Industrial Average and the S&P 500 index rose 35%. There was no increase in the rate of inflation, which was exactly the same in 83 and 84 as it was in 82. Unemployment fell from 10.6 in December of 82 down to 8.1 in December of 83, down to 7.1 in 84. What caused that to happen? What caused that to happen was Reagan raised taxes in 1982. But you've got these economic terrorists who are digging in their heels. You got these Republicans, these self-indulged, narcissistic, little billionaire puppets who are saying, no, 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 we can't raise taxes. And you know why? Because they learned this lesson from Reagan. They learned this. They know this. They want to make this president a one-term president. It's all about it's all about politics. It's all about their team winning. They don't give a damn about this country. They don't care about you. They care about themselves and their political power. Because they know November of 12, they can take the White House and maybe the Senate. They can go back to ramming through all those big tax cuts, ramming through all that deregulation, going and taking it all. Because you've had enough. They've done enough obstruction. They've done enough road blocking. They've done enough poison pilling. They've done enough to tear down the government so that you go, see, it doesn't work. They've done enough of this to get the average person to go, you know what, my life isn't any better. Because they're united. They're united in taking this country down. And you look at that stage. Nobody in their right mind can look at this party now and say you have the best interest of this country at heart. Nobody. They talked about it for weeks. They planned it for weeks. When can we get the most benefit out of this walkout? When can we get politically the most juice? When can we get the biggest bounce? That's our ace in the hole. We're going to hold the country hostage. And we're going to do this to make it look like, oh, we're in there negotiating and they're not. They planned it for weeks. Because they don't care about you. They don't care about a jobs plan. There's no job. Remember November? Jobs, jobs, jobs. The pledge. Remember? We're going to create jobs. We're going to be the party of jobs. Republicans came out and said, up until November, when I talked to constituents, first three things they tell me, jobs, jobs, jobs. That's what we're about, jobs. Not one jobs bill. And when they came out with something of a jobs bill, they didn't really push it through. They just kind of talked in vague terms about it. It was the same failed stuff that got us into the mess we're into in the first place. More tax cuts, more deregulation, more handouts for business. Isn't that how we got in the mess we're in? Or maybe it's just me. Anyway, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. I'm curious, what do you think about this? Staged. Absolutely staged. We're back after this.
Where do You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. It took nearly a decade, but as Jesse Russell reports, employees of the Transportation Security Administration now have a collective voice on the job.
Nearly 45,000 TSA employees across the country voted in favor of representation by the American Federation of Government Employees. 85% of the transportation security officers voted in favor of unionizing in April, but they didn't agree on which union should be their representative. The AFGE just barely nudged out the National Treasury Employees Union by 500 votes. President Barack Obama restored the right of TSA employees to collectively bargain when he took office, a right stripped by the previous administration. In a statement, AFGE National President John Gage said that as the union moves forward representing the workers, it acknowledges that airports of different sizes have very different issues. He pledged to cover all of the bases.
The United Farm Workers are hoping a California bill allowing farm workers to form unions by majority sign-up will soon become law. Sean Hamilton reports.
United Farm Workers and their supporters rallied at California's state capitol Thursday to persuade Governor Jerry Brown to sign legislation making it easier for farm workers to organize. The author of Senate Bill 104, Sacramento Democrat Daryl Steinberg, told the crowd he was honored to have sponsored the Fair Treatment for Farm Workers Act, which he referred to as a civil rights bill. Arturo Rodriguez, president of the United Farm Workers, said the large growers who oppose the legislation pretend everything is fine and that they treat the workers well. Rodriguez said they ignore the 16 heat-related deaths that have occurred in the last 6 years. He said the growers don't provide enough water, shade, or rest breaks and generally push the workers too hard.
They're not machines. They're human beings, and they cannot work like that. That's why we need fair treatment for farm workers, and SB 104 signed by Governor Jerry Brown, so farm workers will have a voice on the job, so they'll have an opportunity to really control what's taking place.
Governor Brown has until June 28th to sign the bill. Sean Hamilton, Sacramento, California.
Pacifica Radio says it's riveting. This is what democracy looks like. Wisconsin's Worker Uprising is a one-hour documentary for Madison-based Workers Independent News. Get your copy today at laborradio.org. This newscast made possible in part through underwriting from the AFL-CIO. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Your proud defender of the working class majority. Rick Smith.
Is this where we're heading? Ellsworth, Maine. This couple, 20 year, in their 20s, bought two marine shipping containers. You know those things, you know those you see on the back of trucks, those big containers, 20 foot long? Bought two of them for $1,500. They have dropped it onto their land. They have fitted it with, you know, with water and electricity. And that is now their home. Here's the thing. You look at this, and I'm looking at the, you know, picture of it. 21st century cardboard box, in my opinion. Is this the kind of things we're going back to, where we're making makeshift houses, shanty towns, you know, Hoovervilles, if you will? Is this where we're heading? Is this what the Republicans in both Washington and in Harrisburg, is this what they've got in store for us as they hold this country and this state hostage? I mean, this is what it is. What's going on in D.C. right now is exactly what it is. This is a hostage crisis. The ransom is our future. The ransom is health care for the future. My old age, my grandparents. That's the future. That's the ransom. That's what they want. They want that Social Security money so they can gamble it on Wall Street. And when they lose, oh, well, hey, it was just a little money, that's all. We were insured by you. And that Medicare that takes care of seniors, they don't need it. We have too much health care. And you look at what they're doing here in the state. You look at the massive cuts. This governor proposed a $1 billion cut to K-12 education. This governor proposed 56% cut to higher education. Hundreds of millions of dollars in cuts to health and human services. Now, you know, the good, you know, God-fearing Christian family values, high moral fiber Republicans here in the state, they've moved a little bit more into education, so the cuts are not $1 billion. They're a little less than that. But they took it from somewhere else. And that's going to be the key. You know, so as we're looking down the road, we're going to see teachers laid off. Down the road, we're going to see local property taxes going up. Why? Because they're saying the state doesn't have the obligation, they don't have the money to fulfill their obligation, which is a false choice, in my opinion. And why are they doing this? No, they're doing it so we can protect the big corporations. We're doing it so we can protect their tax handouts. We're doing it so we can not tax the Marcellus Shale. Doing it for a bunch of reasons. None of which have to do with educating our children or fixing our roads and bridges. And there's so many opportunities out there. The Delaware loophole. We're one of the few states that don't have combined reporting. The Department of Revenue here in the state of Pennsylvania said, we have lost $500 million in revenue. Lost $500 million. The drilling that's going on in this state, where 87% of those companies sticking needles into our ground, sucking out the resource from under our feet, pay no corporate net income tax in this state. 87%. And now we find out we've got a budget surplus of $675 million. So we could get revenue from the Delaware loophole, $500 million. We could tax the drillers, and the drilling companies want it. They want to be taxed. They don't want to hear me on the radio every night saying they're not paying taxes. They want to pay like they do everywhere else. Every other state in this country where there's natural gas, they are paying a tax, and they want to do it here so they get off the front pages. We're talking $1 billion right there. You're talking the $675 million. There's almost $1.7 billion we could restore to health and human services. We could restore to education. But we're not going to do it. Why? Because we need to protect those loopholes. Need to protect it. And all I keep hearing out of these dimwits is, oh, well, there's waste, fraud, and abuse in welfare. There's the mysterious number of $400 million. So we're going to go after a mythical $400 million that may or may not be out there in waste, fraud, and abuse and welfare, but we're going to leave on the table the $500 million that we know corporations aren't paying. What sense does that make to you? Doesn't make any sense to me, other than the Republican Party is bought, paid for by multinational, multi-state corporations. They are a wholly owned subsidiary of corporate America. And they don't care about you, me, the poor, anybody sick, struggling, unemployed. They don't care. You know what they care about? They care about the bottom line of the person putting campaign contributions into their pockets. That's what they care about. Anyway, let's go to the phone line. Got Ike on line one. How you doing tonight? How you feeling, brother?
Right on, Rick. My God, straight up. You know, they're ripping the top off. They're trying to rip the top off of Blair Mountain. I mean, they'll go to any place they got to go to get coal.
Yep.
And the shale, what are they doing with the wastewater? Where are they going with the wastewater? The fracking, 13 million gallons of water per well? Huh?
Yeah, well, they claim they have treatment centers, and they're using deep well injection methods, and they got all this. And when I get the coloring book, I'll be able to tell you, because Fracosaurus, Talisman Terry, the Fracosaurus, is gonna lay it all out for the children in their wonderful coloring book.
Yeah, and for the children, I'll tell you, bull dingles, okay?
Yep.
Look, straight up, all right? We gotta develop wind, water, and solar.
Absolutely.
And we also have to go to, instead of corn, I got news for you. If you've never been down south, you can get all the kudzu down here you want. As a matter of fact, you can park your car in the driveway down here. Kudzu grows so fast, the next morning you go out there, and you got to hack your way back to your car. And it's got plenty of oil in it. So does hemp. I mean, come on, y'all. Let's get up off of this. Let's quit playing. All right?
The problem, Mike, is there's no profit in that, brother. You know, the solar thing, and I'm thinking that they're figuring out how to benefit from solar. In fact, I'm putting panels on my house as we speak.
Well, I can tell you how they benefit from it. It's if they go ahead and finance, much like if I call a gas company down here and I go, you know what? Hey, I'm all down with natural gas, and I need my stove replaced. Think about it, boom, they stick it on my bill, right? There is a way that the companies can come in. That's why Exxon's been moving into coal. They've got vast holdings in coal.
And in natural gas.
Because, yeah. I mean, Exxon Mobil is going to move wherever the money's at.
Absolutely.
But, you know, look, let me also move off to something else real quick.
Go ahead.
I'm calling you from Charleston, South Carolina. You know I'm a 99er.
I hear you.
All right? Well, I went out and I looked, and I've been looking and looking and looking, and I finally popped on a job, right?
Okay.
Here you go.
Congratulations.
28 years painting. They're going to give me $13 an hour, which is what I've been working for all week. I've been working on $2 million houses, all right? In the historic part of Charleston, down near the Battery, right? If any of y'all know where I'm talking about. But I'm talking about big, old money, right? The man comes to me to pay me today what he owes me. Has he got all my money? No. I get two-thirds of my money. You know, look. We just passed this law down here that you got to e-verify all your employers, all your employees. And, you know, black, white, purple, I don't care where you come from. If you're illegal, welcome to my country. Hey, you can do my job. That's fine. No sweat. All right? But what I'm saying here is this. These employers are addicted. Cheap labor is like heroin.
And they're addicted to exploitable labor because, as you're saying, I'll bet you if you were undocumented, I'll bet my bottom line that's all you'd be getting, and they'd send you on your way with a pat on the head.
I might not have even gotten paid, but beyond that, I'll tell you something else, too. You want to call me unskilled labor, I'll challenge you right now, my friend. I'll tell you what, I'll give you the same equipment I've got. And you can start in the living room, I'll start in the back bedroom, and we'll see who meets who where and who's got to fix what.
I guarantee you, I'd beat you. The only problem would be is all the light covers and all the outlets and all the windows and the floor would be painted too. But I get your point, and I appreciate it. It's always...
I'm skilled labor, and I'm tired of getting my face spit at. I'm sick and tired of this crap, no matter where you come from, no matter who you are. But by God, I'm tired of it, this college education crap, and everybody running the world, and I'm down here doing the work, and I ain't getting paid.
Well, this is why we need to have labor unions. This is why people need to collectively bargain. This is why I've been preaching this stuff for so long. This divide and conquer is killing us, and it's...
And by the way, I might be a dead man walking, but I won't know if I don't get health care.
Exactly. And I wish you the best, brother, and good for you.
I appreciate it, brother.
Thanks so much. I appreciate it, Ike. Always great talking to you, brother. You know, and look, that's conservative world. And, you know, that whole scenario, as he laid it out, look, that kind of stuff happens all the time. You know, you're working on multi-million dollar houses, and they want to cheat you out of what they owe you. And I guarantee if he was undocumented, they would have cheated him, which is why, look, you know, we can have discussions on immigration. I'm not fond of how things have worked out, but I cannot, in good conscience, force them deeper underground and force those people into situations where those people, where the wealthy and the employers will screw them even more. And put them in a position where, because look, if it were me, I'd be here too. We've got some serious structural problems, and it starts with our trade policies, and it starts with how we deal with Mexico. There are a lot of problems, but I'm telling you, forcing people deeper underground is not the answer. Not at all. Your thoughts, Jake?
It was hard to hear him, to listen to him speak. I mean, here's a man, by his own admission, that worked hard all his life, skilled tradesman, doesn't have health care, and he finally gets a job, and what happens? There's a chance that he's going to be cheated out of part of his salary at a pretty mediocre rate of $13 an hour for a skilled tradesman is awfully low. But that's what's happening, and you're exactly right. If you were an undocumented worker, you can bet they'd cheat you. You know what it reminds me of? What he just described reminds me of the situation that we ran into down in New Orleans.
Absolutely.
After Katrina. What happened there was third worldish. We should be ashamed as a nation that we allowed it to happen. And yet some of the cronies were politically well-connected. They were politically well-connected to the big money in the state, who was connected to the Bush administration. It was just shameful, shameful exploitation.
Anyway, last night, kind of be honest, I was flipping mad when I left here last night after that voter ID bill. And again, 108 to 88, all the Republicans except one voted to steal your right to the ballot box. Chris Ross, the only sane Republican among them, to not side with Mad Cow, Daryl Metcalf, his steal the vote from people bill. Here's the thing. I love what Mad Cow had to say. He said that his measure is necessary because it'll cut down on the, quote, significant voter fraud plaguing Pennsylvania's elections. Significant voter fraud. Significant voter fraud. According to the Pennsylvania Commission on Sentencing, there have been fewer than two dozen voter fraud convictions in the last decade. In 2008 and 2010, there were a total of 11 convictions for voter fraud. Eight of those convictions were one person who tried to misrepresent himself a number of times at a number of different voting places. One guy. So you're talking about four people. So over four people, we're going to talk about spending anywhere between $4 and $11 million over four people, and really just one guy. To me, that's great governance, don't you think? According to a study from New York University, 11% of the people in this country do not have photo IDs. 11%. 4 million people here in the state of Pennsylvania do not have, do not need, do not use photo ID. Stop and think about that for a little bit. Voter fraud's extremely rare and how this would be caught. The real voter fraud is the voter buying, the voter intimidation, these right-wing loony groups sending out flyers saying, oh, election's moved to Monday this year, or the election's been moved to Wednesday this year. One study done in Minnesota. Right after Norm Coleman and Norm Franklin and Al Franken ran the Senate race there, they found a grand total of seven suspicious votes. Seven votes out of nearly 3 million cast. There were no charges filed that year because they couldn't find any cases of fraud. But in Indiana, where they have one of these laws, they turned away more than a dozen nuns, elderly nuns, who had been voting in the same place for years and don't drive and don't have a picture ID. They were turned away, dozens. Is that what we've just done? We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk with Pennsylvania State Representative Joe Preston right back after this.
Radio of, for, and by we the working people. The Rick Smith Show.
Step right up, ladies and gentlemen, and get your ticket to see Rick the Wonder Worker. Texas Governor Rick Perry is less than revered back home, where he's widely ridiculed as Governor Goodhair. So he's now on the road with the traveling medicine show, billing himself as the Texas Miracle Man. From New York to New Orleans, he's wowing the Republican hardcore with astounding tales of his job-creating prowess, suggesting he can do for America what he's done for Texas. Hold it right there. First, while the Texas unemployment rate is 1% lower than the national rate, 23 other states are doing even better, including New York. Also, his self-touted record of job growth is essentially the same as Democratic Governor Ann Richards produced, only she didn't call hers a miracle. Most damning, however, is that Perry jobs are really jobettes, offering low pay, no benefits, and no upward mobility. In fact, under Reaganomics, Texas has added more minimum wage jobs than all other states combined. Indeed, Governor Perry presides over a state that has more people in poverty and more without health coverage than any other. Meanwhile, the Miracle Man has dug Texas into one of the deepest budget holes in the country, $27 billion short of the money needed to cover the same miserly level of state services Texans now get, even as our population has grown dramatically. Although his party controls the state Senate and has a supermajority in the House, he was unable to pass a budget in the regular legislative session, forcing him to convene a costly special session. Maybe that's why he's now on the road. This is Jim Hightower saying, toward the end of George W.'s right-wing presidency, national columnist Molly Ivins said, "Next time I tell you someone from Texas should not be elected president of the United States, please pay attention." Hightower's commentaries are brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown, the monthly newsletter with Hightower's populist take on what the powers that be are up to. Find out more at HightowerLowdown.org.
You helped to turn America blue. Now let's keep it that way. The Rick Smith Show. This is the time. This is the place to win the future. There's not much left to go around. Everyone is in a land of confusion.
Well, I'll tell you, I don't know that it's a land of confusion at all. I think the Republicans know exactly what they want to do. They want to turn this into a third world country where we have two classes of people. The very wealthy who live in their gated communities, on their islands, go to their private clubs, and then the rest of us who scurry for crumbs. The rest of us who don't have access to the ballot box. And like I said last night, you know, the Mad Cow Bill, Metcalf's bill, the steal in the dead of night. Access of millions, some 4 million Pennsylvanians from the right of the ballot. It's just, it should be criminal. But the vote was 108 to 88, one sane Republican, and all the Democrats voted against it. I guess there is some unity on that side of the aisle after all. But last night, one representative stood up and said, "Are we turning Pennsylvania into Mississippi?" And that's why I've asked him to come talk to us, Pennsylvania State Representative Joe Preston. Representative, thanks for taking time for us.
Good evening. Good to be here.
You know, I'm looking at this bill, I'm looking at what's going on, and this is really a theft of the ballot box, something that the right screamed and hollered and hemmed and hawed about when we were talking about the Employee Free Choice Act. But now, no problem using big government to take my rights away.
Well, you're right, and this has been a growing trend, I guess, across the United States. A lot of states that we've noticed about the voter suppression. I think what's really interesting in this state, in Pennsylvania here you got Republican governor, Republican Senate, Republican House. They won, but they want to try to suppress it even more. And that's what I mean. I mean, now that you got everybody in my minority, let's keep them even further down in the minority and put them down deeper in a hole. And that's, yesterday, probably in 29 years of me in the House, was probably the worst day that I've ever had. I was very emotional about that last night.
Especially considering in our conversations with Andy Hoover from the ACLU, who watched the whole thing last night because we were on air when it was going on, who basically said the folks from the Black Caucus didn't even get an opportunity to stand up and voice their opinions.
No, and here's how ridiculous it is. They had three amendments that the Republicans said were unconstitutional. One dealt with the elderly, the other two dealt with the mentally and physically challenged. They would not be excluded and given a little bit of break as far as the ID is concerned. But yet, in a sense, in the bill as it stands now, if you live in a nursing home or an assisted living, and you could be handicapped, you could be 20 years old, you could be mentally, physically challenged, you could even be in the military, but you would be able to vote. But if you lived across the street and you had one of those disabilities, you couldn't vote without ID. Now, you explain that to me, and that's not voter suppression.
It doesn't make sense. I look at my grandmother. My grandmother is 80-some years old. She hasn't driven a car in probably 10 years. She doesn't have a driver's license. She doesn't have a need for one. She's lived in the same house 45 years. Everybody knows her. I'm sorry, her having to drive to, you know, getting someone to take her downtown to get a photo ID to me just seems kind of dumb at this point.
Well, it's more than just that. It's challenging. It's also intimidating when you consider how many people, you'll find that most people vote at the same place every time. And the boards of elections haven't changed that much. What's also unique here in Pennsylvania, our voters registrars in 67 counties are all autonomous. They run their show, not the state. Even the voter registration, they purge them when they want to, even though they're supposed to purge them. So even today, you can still be registered in 3, 4, 5, or 6 counties and going to have a different address, if some people do, whether it's, you know, whether it's the brother's house, your sister's house, or another relative's house. But yet, in a sense, here we are. We might as well almost give them a green card. That's what really upsets me.
Absolutely. So what you're saying is this bill isn't going to stop voter fraud in the way that I thought of in voting in different precincts, as long as you've got an address in each one of those areas.
No, and you know what's interesting? It's unfortunate that here in America, a lot of people don't show up to vote anyway.
Right.
We have one of the lowest voter turnouts in the world. And here it is. They won. They have the elections. They have the elections going. And it's very difficult to even imagine that the voter fraud. And you have to remember, there are only 4 cases. In the last 10 years, there's only been 4 cases.
And how much money are we going to spend on this?
Well, they say it's $11 million. But yet, in a sense, you remember something. The people who work at the polls, they're in a sense underpaid. They work there about 14 hours a day. They get about $90 to be able to work 12, 13, or 14 hours. Plus, they have to train a lot of people. You run the equipment. And basically, it's $11 million in state funding. And here's what really made people mad. They're going to take the money out of the motor license fund.
Jesus. Man, I'll tell you, it gets weirder and weirder every day because, and you know, as you pointed out, four cases over the last couple of years, and some of the reports I saw, I think there have been 10 cases over the last decade, 11 cases in the last decade, and we're spending all of this money at a time. We're on the budget side. We're talking about cutting millions of dollars to Health and Human Services. We're talking about cutting $1 billion from K-12 education, cutting 56% of the higher ed budget, cutting funding to libraries, cutting just a cut, a sea of cuts. But here we've got money. We can find $11 million to disenfranchise the elderly, to disenfranchise people who don't have cars and minorities and people in poverty. It seems a little twisted to me, but I guess I understand it in the way of as Paul Weyrich, the guy who founded the Heritage Foundation said. Listen to this clip.
Now, many of our Christians have what I call the goo-goo syndrome. Good government. They want everybody to vote. I don't want everybody to vote. Elections are not won by a majority of people. They never have been from the beginning of our country, and they are not now. As a matter of fact, our leverage in the elections, quite candidly, goes up as the voting populace goes down.
And that is the Republican frame of mind. They know that they have the voter disadvantage, the registration disadvantage in this state, and if we can keep the other side down, if we can suppress the vote, if we can disenfranchise, they got a better shot of winning.
But the arrogance was also the procedures that they used. A lot of members did have some questions on whether or not what was in the bill. And then the maker of the bill refuses to even answer the questions before they did the parliamentary procedure. And all I know is this. We usually start our session with a prayer and a salute to the American flag. But here it is. We can salute the American flag. We can have a prayer, talk to God, but we couldn't talk to Harold Metcalf. He refused to answer questions. Now, you tell me how that shows you how somebody feels about the voters. But yet, in a sense, here we are trying to do a voter protection bill.
Yeah, but here's the thing, Representative. I mean, you look at the ideology that's gripped the other side, the Republican side of the aisle. You look at the unemployment bill that they just tried to ram through Scott Perry's 916, which is just a destructive pro-business bill, a big sloppy wet kiss to the Chamber of Commerce and to the National Federation of Independent Businesses. I'm still questioning whether he wrote it, if they wrote it for him. But you go down the list of all of these, you know, the no rights at work legislation that Metcalf's putting out, all of these anti-middle class, anti-working family bills, and it's all pure ideology. It's the same stuff we see across the country.
Oh, not only that, they don't work beside the same people, and it's just very disappointing that here they've got the majority now, and if you almost want to talk about tax and spend, here they are actually spending more. They said they're cutting back, but yet in a sense, look what they're doing about health care. We're losing all the federal dollars that would come here for a few dollars more. When you put down one and someone gives you $14, come on. You've got to be able to take advantage of that because health care drives our costs up.
Yep.
And if we're not providing those things, it just gets very difficult when we're trying to deal with this. A lot of our colleagues on the other side of the aisle have other jobs. They're not full-time. And they try to say that the state's not paying for the cars, but the companies and businesses are paying for the cars. So
I would love to see that. I would love to.
In the 50s and the 60s, it's like we're down in Alabama, that they're going to try to put us down even further. But we're going to be strong. We're going to stand up to them. We're going to continue to raise the issue to the people, and I hope the people will stand up going into 2012.
Well, again, this is the reason that on this program we've been pointing out the fact, you look at this budget. You, as a Democrat, I don't... Maybe you personally have a different view on this, but every Democrat that I've talked to so far in this state has told me they had no input on the budget. The budget was just presented to them. This is what it is. If you want to see it, we're passing it with or without you, especially without you.
Basically what they told us, take it or leave it. So I have no other choice but to leave it. I can't vote for this.
So at the end of it, what has to happen is the messaging has to be, look, all of these tax increases that are coming at the local level, all of these teacher firings, all of the libraries that are going to have diminished hours, all of these services that we're not going to get are because of one party who controls everything in this state and cannot be stopped.
All across this state right now, if you look at all the local small-town newspapers, you're seeing about property tax increases for school districts. Wait till the issue comes up about the roads. You're going to have to be able to deal with services. You're going to have an awful lot of infrastructure. People who are going to be asking for money for the water project. And there's a safety issue and a health issue that we'll be looking at just as well.
Yeah, right down the line, Representative. Maybe you'll agree, maybe you won't. The folks that I see on the right, the Republicans, these are folks who don't believe in government and have done everything they can do to destroy it so that they can turn around and say, look, we told you it didn't work. We drove it in the ground, and it didn't work.
Yeah, well, I don't see any of them quitting. So government's been somewhat good to them, I guess. I really can't tell you. I see a lot of their friends are getting jobs and taking positions. Look at the multimillionaires that this governor has put in as far as secretaries are concerned. These were business people who, and now they're overseeing their own industry.
I mean, isn't that is just remarkable if you stop and really think about it. The whole messaging that goes behind this, that we need to put, we need to put ExxonMobil in charge of our environment. We need to put the very people who cause most of the damage in charge of policing themselves. And they have this view that these companies are self-policing, that, you know, they learned their lesson. They don't want to be sued. It's just mind-blowing.
Well, this all goes back to the original voting concept. To be able to suppress the vote going into 2012 to make it more Gestapo type of an issue whereby you're going to have to show the ID. And an awful lot of people, again, 30, 40, 50 years going to vote, know the same people. They call them by their first name. But yes, in the sense, you still have to sign your name to the car.
Yep.
Now, in a sense, like I said, everybody's going to have to go get ID eventually because I have every feeling that the governor's going to sign it.
Yeah, I keep telling my libertarian friends, this is the national ID card. Here it comes. Get ready for it. All that fear that we're going to have our papers and we're going to carry our papers with us wherever we go, be it with immigration, be it with voting. This is coming. It's coming to fruition.
Well, I guess having been down in the South to see some of the voters' frustration that was going on and the voters' suppression after they finally eliminated that poll tax, it's almost like the same situation going up here. Because, again, where's the fraud? You had four cases in the whole Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, and they're all several million votes. And yet, in a sense, we're going to spend $11 million.
It doesn't make sense. The last thing I've got for you before I let you go, I would love to see someone propose a piece of legislation criminalizing what I know is coming. When this passes, I can guarantee I know what's going to happen. There are going to be right-wing groups out there putting out flyers, robocalls, making phone banking, saying, you know what, hey, seniors, hey, you know, people living in this neighborhood or that. That law doesn't take effect until next year. Don't worry about it. It's next year. It's down the road. I would like to see that made a crime. To me, that's voter fraud.
Well, that's one of the things that people are going to have to be aware of, and I think it's going to be a lot of our own responsibility of elected officials to put out a call about watch out, be careful, and let's protect our rights. And let's also get out there and vote.
Absolutely. Pennsylvania Representative Joe Preston, I appreciate your time. Would love to have you back again soon.
Thanks a lot, guy. Have a good day.
All right, you too. We're going to take a quick break. Right back after this, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
Ask me, Council 13 members, did you know that you have voluntary benefits available to you that you can pay for through the ease of payroll deduction? Ask me, Council 13 offers a voluntary benefits package to help provide money when you or a covered family member incurs one of these life events, accidents, critical illness, disability, or death. No one can avoid life's unfortunate situations. However, AFSCME Council 13 has provided you with the opportunity to ease the financial burden on your family by preparing now. Find out more about Trustmark's voluntary benefits. BBS Benefit Solutions can help you get the security you need. Call BBS at 1-866-902-2561. Again, call BBS at 1-866-902-2561.
Hi, I'm Bob Snyder, president of Teamsters Local 776 here in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. For more than 100 years, Teamsters have been standing together to create a better tomorrow. We Teamster members are your friends and neighbors. Teamsters move goods across the nation, take care of seniors, serve and protect our community, and so much more. We are hardworking, dedicated professional workers, united to make our lives, our communities, and our nation stronger. If you want to be part of the team, join the Teamsters for a better tomorrow. Contact us at 1-800-692-6280. That's 1-800-692-6280. Or visit our website at TeamstersLocal776.org. We are people helping people.
The super rich to pay their fair share for once. The Rick Smith Show.
You know, I just keep looking at this and I go, you know, they had four cases. Four. And we're going to spend $11 million because four, and really just one. It was the one guy who was really blatant about it, but four cases. Four. And we're going to spend $11 million. Does that make a lot of sense to you? Makes no sense to me. Let's go to the phone lines. Got James on line one. How are we doing tonight, James?
Pretty good. I just wanted to say that somebody on your Facebook page mentioned something about, in light of this, maybe having to do another Freedom Summer.
There you go.
I think it might be a good idea.
That would be a great idea.
But here's another thing, and I'm going to take kind of a big picture like I always do.
Please do.
What is legislation like this going to say to our, you know, the younger people that are constantly leaving our state?
Well, they're going to tell you, we don't want you to vote. Don't, you
no,
know,
no, 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 no. You don't get it. One person said there, we'd be coming like Alabama or Mississippi.
Right.
I mean, brain drain. Now, are young people really going to want to live in a state like this, or even with, you know, right to work for less, where maybe their best chance at a job is going to be working at a Walmart?
Yeah, well, here's the thing, James. The reality is the Republicans want to make the entire country that way. So there's going to be no brain drain unless you're going to leave and go to China. The reality is they want this entire country to look like Alabama, Mississippi, Texas. We got a governor here who wants us to emulate Texas, a state that's got one of the highest uninsured rates, got one of the highest dropout rates, got the highest number of workers working for minimum wage. That's the Republican way, man.
Oh yeah, you know that. I know that. The problem is, you know, like, you've got people that basically listen to these, the mouth, media mouthpieces of these people, and, you know, what we know, what you and I know, and your listeners know, isn't really what America as a whole knows yet.
No, not yet. And that's why we got to keep it up.
The reason I say yet is, let's just say that in about another week or so, the labor community of Harrisburg is going to have another media voice.
Well, I know you got a gig, and I can't wait to see what you're putting out, man.
I just wanted to give you a heads up on that.
I'm looking forward to it.
Well, all righty then, so we'll see where this goes.
And you've always got a place to come and give me your stuff and a place to come talk. I appreciate it, James.
All righty then. Bye-bye.
Thanks so much. I mean, look at this. And the reality is, do we want to look like Alabama? Do we want to look like Mississippi, Arkansas? Do we want to look like Texas, where you have two distinct classes of people? Do we want to look like South Carolina, where Ike, you know, said, look, I've been out of work for, I'm a 99er, almost 2 years, been out of a job. Finally get something, and they want to cheat him out of wages. Again, you know, you stop and you look at this, and a couple million dollar for homes. Two classes of people. This is where, and you think what you want about John Edwards. Scumbag, doofus, whatever. He was right on policy. We are moving in the directions of the two Americas. The ones who have, and the ones who do not. No more middle class. This nation is going to look like a pyramid. There'll be a handful of very, very wealthy at the top, and as you move down to the bottom, you have the broadest section in poverty. Instead of that diamond we used to have, where you had a couple people at the top who were doing real well, you had a couple people at the bottom who were struggling, making their way up, but the mass, the big fat middle, the middle class, the people who could, you know, make a living, put food on the table, keep a roof over their head, put a car in the driveway, maybe take a vacation, take a day off to coach Little League. They don't want that world. They want poverty. We're back after this.
Rick Smith Show.
It's the Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. It took nearly a decade, but as Jesse Russell reports, employees of the Transportation Security Administration now have a collective voice on the job.
Nearly 45,000 TSA employees across the country voted in favor of representation by the American Federation of Government Employees. 85% of the transportation security officers voted in favor of unionizing in April, but they didn't agree on which union should be the representative. the AFGE, just barely nudged out the National Treasury Employees Union by 500 votes. President Barack Obama restored the right of TSA employees to collectively bargain when he took office, a right stripped by the previous administration. In a statement, AFGE National President John Gage said that as the union moves forward representing the workers, it acknowledges that airports of different sizes have very different issues. He pledged to cover all of the bases.
The United Farm Workers are hoping a California bill allowing farm workers to form unions by majority sign-up will soon become law. Sean Hamilton reports.
United Farm Workers and their supporters rallied at California's state capitol Thursday to persuade Governor Jerry Brown to sign legislation making it easier for farm workers to organize. The author of Senate Bill 104, Sacramento Democrat Daryl Steinberg, told the crowd he was honored to have sponsored the Fair Treatment for Farm Workers Act, which he referred to as a civil rights bill. Arturo Rodriguez, president of the United Farm Workers, said the large growers who oppose the legislation pretend everything is fine and that they treat the workers well. Rodriguez said they ignore the 16 heat-related deaths that have occurred in the last 6 years. He said the growers don't provide enough water, shade, or rest breaks and generally push the workers too hard.
They're not machines. They're human beings, and they cannot work like that. That's why we need fair treatment for farm workers, and SB 104 signed by Governor Jerry Brown, so farm workers will have a voice in the job, so they'll have an opportunity to really control what's taking place.
Governor Brown has until June 28th to sign the bill. Sean Hamilton, Sacramento, California.
Pacifica Radio says it's riveting. This is what democracy looks like. Wisconsin's Worker Uprising is a one-hour documentary from Madison-based Workers Independent News. Get your copy today at laborradio.org. This newscast made possible in part through underwriting from the AFL-CIO. You've been listening to WIND, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Back to the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
When those Walmart guys hear the word unionize, they go completely insane. They'll find out who, and boy, if it's you, you're in for a world of pain. Yeah, I got friends with low wages. They work for Walmart in outrageously bad conditions. 'Cause the union's missing.
Well, that's the absolute truth. You know, as I've been saying for the longest time, you know, I go back to my grandmother. 1985 was making $8 an hour. 6 weeks vacation, full dental, full medical, full vision, sick days, personal days, all of that stuff. Walmart came to town, put everybody out of business with their low wages. That was it, the end of it. And now what you've got is 26 years later, the working class in this country has not recovered. I would beg to say that the people working in Walmart and these big box retailers aren't making much more than $8 an hour, and I guarantee you they're not getting the same kind of health care, the same kind of vacation, the same kind of pension. Just not happening. And what's happened is we have seen the owners and the working class separate even further, where all of the gains are going up. Just amazing stuff. That's why I've asked Terrence Heath, who's written a couple of great pieces over at the Our Future blog, because it is Our Future Friday. Terrence, thanks for taking time for us.
Hi, thanks for having me.
You know, I look at this Supreme Court decision, and again, I think some people were surprised by it. We here at the program for the longest time have been saying, with this Supreme Court, it's going to get shot down, and as it did, tell me what your thoughts are.
I wasn't surprised by it either. I had written about it earlier in March when Dan Rather was reporting about it, because right about that time was when things were happening in Wisconsin, and I could see the parallels lining up with the removal of collective bargaining rights in Wisconsin. And here you have private sector workers who are literally using about the only tool they have left when it comes to seeking justice in the workplace from their employer. And after the Citizens United ruling, I was concerned that this would be a bookend. of sorts, and it's turned out to be that, if you ask me.
Yeah, you know, the other ruling that I look at, I point to the AT&T case, where they basically ruled, and this is just amazing to me, they ruled that you can't, all these people who filed a class action lawsuit for being screwed out of $30 a piece couldn't file a class action suit. They had to sue individually. So basically saying, you know, telling the story, if you're going to screw people, do it in small amounts over a very large number of people, because they're probably not going to be able to sue you, because we're not going to let them come together. In this case, kind of the same thing. Redefining what a class action suit really is.
Right. Betty Dukes, the main plaintiff in this case, described it as a David and Goliath battle. And literally what the Supreme Court has done is take away David's slingshot and send him into the arena.
Not just his slingshot, the rock, his arms, yeah, his feet.
Exactly.
And I guess, you know, this is the direction that the conservatives want us to go. They want to have a class of overlords and then the rest of the peasantry who fights over crumbs.
There is, on one side of, I guess, the progressive movement, a kind of discussion of people looking at this, and it's something that I'm going to address in my next post, which will be the third and last on this, about the Supreme Court's decision and what it means for progressive change. And the tactic of using the court as a means of advancing change. It's something that has been important, I think, in progressive politics since at least Brown versus Board of Education, but I've read some people like Matt Iglesias say that period was really kind of an anomaly, and when you look at the history of the court, that the way that it's ruling now is almost just reverting back to some of the things that did before, say, around Brown versus Board of Education, and that what progressives have to do is to not just depend on the court and to look at all of the options and all the tools in our arsenal. And I kind of agree with that, and I kind of have some misgivings or questions about it, I guess.
Yeah, I'm not a huge fan of his, but the reality is on one vein, he's right. This court, the Roberts Court, is moving backwards to the court of the early 1900s, the Lochner-era court, where they used the court to shoot down minimum wage laws, maximum hour laws. They basically, any advancement forth the working class, they shot down as unconstitutional because of this concept of liberty of contract. And we're kind of getting the same idea, only from a business perspective now. The liberty of business to have its voice, this idea of corporate personhood.
And the thing that I think is going to have to happen is that we're going to have to make a connection that you actually kind of brought up with your reference to the AT&T case and the ruling in that case. And that is what we're seeing is a simultaneous move to strip workers of their protections and their ability to speak up for themselves and to stand up to employers, to corporations, and stripping consumers as well. If you look at like what you were saying with the AT&T case, but also look at what's happening in the Senate and the battle over getting Elizabeth Warren appointed to head the very agency that she came up with in the first place.
Right.
That there's a movement to simultaneously strip workers and consumers of their protections and the right to stand up for and their ability to stand up for themselves. And I think that if we as progressives can bring those two things together, because that's a huge group of people, that's virtually all of the country, and just about everyone at some point will be touched or will be affected by it. So I think that there is something to be said for broadening our approach and looking at all of the tools in the toolbox. But at the same time, the court to me is a very important path to justice for minorities in this country, for people who will never have, who don't have, and will never have might in numbers or might in money, for that matter.
Yeah, well, it's not going to be this court, I'll guarantee
you
that. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're with Terrence Heath. He's a blogger over at the Campaign for America's Future site, ourfuture.org. We've got a link to his site at thericksmithshow.com. Just click on Terrence Heath's name. It'll take you right there. You know, when I hear a lot of people getting upset about Obama, I'll tell you, a lot of things upset me. I think of this court and the next president conceivably could, looking at the ages of our justices, could put three, possibly four justices on the court in the coming years. And I say, you know, this is exactly why I do not want a Tea Party type, a Romney type. That's why I don't want a pro-business type president in there, even though our president's kind of moving in that direction.
But you could end up with a president who could appoint a court that would make this one look like raving liberal.
Yep.
And that is scary, and that is frightening, and that's something that I think we need to organize around, and we need to tell that story to people in a way that they understand. And with the Walmart case, I think, is a perfect example. There are millions of Americans who are employed, fortunate enough to have a job, but like I said in my post, are also dealing with what's been a huge increase in what's called workplace bullying and pressure in the workplace, and employers using the recession as a means to squeeze their workers even further and demand even more of fewer of them for a lot less than they would in a good economy, because they know they can get away with it.
Well, not just squeeze. You can use the right word: screw, steal from, rip off, rob, cheat. Those are much better words than squeeze.
You're right. You're exactly right.
You know, here's my problem with the court, though. I mean, in the direction our country's going, mm-hmm. with this whole Citizens United thing, this whole corporate person thing, now that you're giving a corporation the same rights that I have, the question is if rights equal dollars, and the game now is how many rights can you afford, mm-hmm. how much of your rights can you afford? I'm not going to have any rights because I can't compete with Walmart. I can't compete with AT&T. I can't compete with these huge multinational corporations.
Right. And that's something that I think more and more people are going to become aware of. And there's an important thing to remember is that we still have some say in, A, who appoints the court in terms of who we put in the White House or who we work to put in the White House. But also, as we're seeing in Congress now in response to the Walmart ruling and the support that's building for a fair pay legislation, that there's also a legislative response where the Supreme Court steps in and does what it did in the Walmart case. Congress also has an opportunity to respond.
Yeah, but it's not going to be this Congress. Not full of these T-twits.
But we can also work to elect people who will do that.
Here's what I would rather have. I got to be honest with you.
Uh-huh.
Instead of going the legislative route, I would rather people become active together, mm-hmm. collectively bargain, form unions,
right.
fight for themselves,
right.
earn something that they hold on to, mm-hmm. that is there, that wasn't given to them by a legislature or a lawmaker. It's something they fought for and earned and bargained for across the negotiating table.
And
to me, that's the answer.
And that's actually a terrific idea. I read someone suggesting that today, and I think it's a great idea to have, as people across the country are dealing with this and talking about it, getting people together, people choosing to get together and forming employee-owned businesses.
Yep.
That, you know, where the people they're collectively bargaining with, I guess, are themselves, because everyone is invested. And that's a choice. That's an option. It's something to work toward, and it would be a balance to what we're seeing now. And it's something that people can do on the ground where they live. They can start working on that right now rather than waiting for someone in D.C. to do it.
Right. And you know, at the end of it, all I keep hearing is the radical right wing saying, oh, we need to do away with these labor laws. We need to do away with the NLRB and the Rail Act. And I say, good, let's do that. Let's get away from them. Let's dump them all. And let's go back to the streets like we did in the 30s and 40s.
And that's exactly what will happen.
And that's what I'm hoping for.
If you get to that point, that's exactly what will happen, because as you saw with Medicaid when the Ryan budget came out, and as you saw in Wisconsin and you've seen in other states, these things start to hit people where they live. And when people see their family members, their friends, and their neighbors suffering, when they see their children losing teachers and sitting in more crowded classrooms, when they see their communities suffering and becoming less of what they wanted in terms of a place to live, they will stand up and say, "Wait a minute, stop! This isn't what we want, and we're not going to have it." And they will fight it.
That's exactly what I'm hoping for, Terrence.
And the history of this country is that if enough people do that, they can make a huge difference.
Yep.
It's the only thing that ever happens.
Yep. The pieces are It's Walmart's World, Part 1 and 2. The trilogy, I guess, is coming out very soon. Again, there's a link at our site at thericksmithshow.com. We'll take you over to the ourfuture.org blog where Terrence writes, and you can check out his pieces there. Terrence, always great to talk with you. Keep up the great work over there, guys.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
We're going to take a quick break right back after this. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. What do you think about this? We're back after this.
The Rick Smith Show, changing America for the better.
Step right up, ladies and gentlemen, and get your ticket to see Rick the Wonder Worker. Texas Governor Rick Perry is less than revered back home, where he's widely ridiculed as Governor Goodhair. So he's now on the road with the traveling medicine show, billing himself as the Texas Miracle Man. From New York to New Orleans, he's wowing the Republican hardcore with astounding tales of his job-creating prowess, suggesting he can do for America what he's done for Texas. Hold it right there. First, while the Texas unemployment rate is 1% lower than the national rate, 23 other states are doing even better, including New York. Also, his self-touted record of job growth is essentially the same as Democratic Governor Ann Richards produced, only she didn't call hers a miracle. Most damning, however, is that Perry jobs are really jobettes, offering low pay, no benefits, and no upward mobility. In fact, under Reaganomics, Texas has added more minimum wage jobs than all other states combined. Indeed, Governor Perry presides over a state that has more people in poverty and more without health coverage than any other. Meanwhile, the Miracle Man has dug Texas into one of the deepest budget holes in the country, $27 billion short of the money needed to cover the same miserly level of state services Texans now get, even as our population has grown dramatically. Although his party controls the state Senate and has a supermajority in the House, he was unable to pass a budget in the regular legislative session, forcing him to convene a costly special session. Maybe that's why he's now on the road. This is Jim Hightower saying, toward the end of George W.'s right-wing presidency, national columnist Molly Ivan said, "Next time I tell you someone from Texas should not be elected president of the United States, please pay attention."
Hightower's commentaries are brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown, the monthly newsletter with Hightower's populist take on what the powers that be are up to. Find out more at HightowerLowdown.org.
Waving the flag of freedom for people, not corporations. Rick Smith.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Remember, check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. Also, you can email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. I do answer all emails personally. Today, labor history, 1938. Congress passed the Fair Labor Standards Act. And what did it do? It banned child labor. It set the 40-hour work week, and it created a national minimum wage. You know, and I stop and I think, could we today pass that kind of groundbreaking legislation? Because up until that point, you had millions of kids in the workplace. You had kids working in mines and textile factories and in factories across the country working on farms. You had millions of kids. You had people working 60, 70 hours, sun up to sun down. We said, no, we're gonna cap the number of hours that people can work. And then you'll have to pay a penalty. See, not like other countries did, though. Other countries said, there's a maximum number of hours. That's it. No overtime. That's it. Maximum number of hours. So we just, you know, kind of punish the employer a little bit. But as healthcare costs have risen, that overtime is no longer a disincentive. It's about a break-even point. But you go back and you think 1938, 1905 is when the Lochner era started, when they began saying, you know what? You can't have maximum hour laws. You can't have minimum wage laws. You can't say that women can only work so many hours or children can work so many hours. Can't do that. Liberty of contract. Also on this day back in 1943, Congress passed the Smith-Conley War Labor Disputes Act over the veto of President Franklin Roosevelt. It allowed the federal government to seize and operate industries threatened by strikes that would interfere with war production. It was hurried to create, to be created after the third coal strike in 7 weeks back there in 1943. And also in 1994 in Decatur, Illinois, the police pepper gassed workers at the A.E. Staley plant gate 1 year into the company's 2.5 year lockout of the paper workers local there. So what you have is you got, you know, these workers who, you know, they wanted their voice. And what did they do? They threw them out in the streets. And, you know, what's interesting to me is all of this hue and cry over the National Labor Relations Board, over the decision to kind of just streamline in a very common sense way, you know, to cut down on the delays, to cut down on the time where employers can beat up on employees, to cut down on the litigation, you know, just to kind of make sure that the process works in a timely fashion. And you've got the right who's going nuts. Now, you didn't hear them. You didn't hear the radical right back in 2006 when the Kentucky River cases came down, when the Bush-appointed NLRB decided they were going to steal millions of workers' rights to organize by mythically claiming that they were supervisors. You're magically here. We're going to touch you on the head. You are a supervisor. You're still doing grunt labor. You're still working your butt off. But you filled out a piece of paper today. Management. You no longer can be in the union. And nobody really cried. Nobody complained. I heard no businesses upset. I heard no Fox News upset. But, boy, we talk about streamlining the process so it works for, oh, I don't know, the people who it's meant to work for. There is nothing but hue and cry. And I don't remember hearing the radical right wing going nuts back in 81 when Reagan fired the Patco workers. And the justification was because the Railway Labor Act bans strikes by people in the airline industry or the railroad industry. I don't remember anybody complaining about that on the radical right. In fact, they were all for it. What a wonderful use. Yes, these are why these laws are put in place. Keep those workers in place. And the sad reality is these laws have been used against working people from the start. The idea was to stop them from striking. The idea was to make sure that, you know, there was some labor peace so that they didn't go out in the streets, so they didn't sit down in factories, so we stopped having these big brawls in the street by the company-paid thugs who would come out with sticks. And we wanted to stop that. And now that we have the NLRB actually talking about streamlining the process to save the workers a little of abuse, and actually save the corporation some money in litigation, you've got the corporatists losing their mind. And the reality is these are very minor, rational, common sense moves. Going to secure the right to the ballot box that they just stole from the people of Pennsylvania last night. Going to eliminate the excessive delays. You know, there was the one case I talked about last night. 25 years it took workers to get a first contract. 25 years. That's gold watch time. They should be able to retire from organizing with a gold watch. At the end of this, we need to rebuild our middle class. And as I said when Obama took office, the first thing he should have passed was the Employee Free Choice Act and a strike replacement bill so that workers have at least one arrow that they can use. Because understand, the employers, they control all of it. They control every condition. They control the whole ball of wax. So they're way up on the mount. Workers are trying to make their way up the side. The National Labor Relations Act was meant to try and even that out a little bit, put people on equal footing, put capital and labor near each other. And what's gone on is over the last 30, 40 years, what we've seen is them use these laws against us. Now understand, these attacks are systematic. These are nationwide attacks on workers. The one thing that corporatists understand, the one thing, they understand that you are the problem. You and your rights are the problem. Because you may demand them at some point, and they, well, heaven forbid, they're actually there for you to use. And what they've been ramming down our throats for years is this small government, small, ineffective, impotent government. Globalization. Oh, we need to compete in other markets so that they can pit you against desperate people all around the globe and make a desperation class here at home. And I always love the whole we need labor flexibility. You hear this all the time from the anti-union people. Well, you know, we just can't deal with those unions. They're not flexible enough. Oh, you mean like just firing people for no reason? Yeah, that's kind of inflexible. Actually talking to somebody and saying, you know what, conditions might be bad. We might have you do that some other way. And the other thing they always ram down our throats. We need to have that flexibility, and we're not going to pursue full employment. We're not going to. Sorry. Not going to do it. We're going to have, there's an acceptable level of unemployment. And I go back to Gomper's quote. You know, what do we want? What do workers want? What does labor want? We want more schools and less jails, more books and less arsenals, more learning and less vice, more leisure, less greed, more justice, less revenge. In fact, more of the opportunities to cultivate our better natures, to make ourselves better. That's what we want, opportunity. And, you know, I listened to Ike call a little bit earlier, Jake, and the reality is here's a guy, skilled tradesman, working on a multi-million dollar house, $13 an hour, and they want to cheat him out of that. And I'm sure they didn't pay unemployment. I'm sure they didn't pay workman's comp. I'm sure they didn't pay Social Security. I'm sure they didn't pay any of that. I'm sure that was, here's $13 an hour, and oh, we're going to cheat you out of part of that, because that's what we've been getting away with.
And it wasn't too long ago, just a couple decades ago, that guys like Ike were the bedrock of the working class. A guy like him could earn a good wage, raise a family, be proud of what he was doing, live a good life, live the American dream, and look what we have now. The man hasn't worked. Well, he said he's a 99er, so he hasn't worked probably close to 2 years. Now he gets work, and they want to cheat him out of the few dollars that he's making. And we call this America. It's getting to the point, Rick, where I'm not so sure I recognize our nation anymore. That's sad. That's sad, sad, sad.
Well, the Republicans want to ram through a couple more free trade agreements, send some more jobs overseas. And fortunately, as of right now, as it's being told right now, the Morning Call reported this week that Senator Bob Casey, Pennsylvania senator, he's made it clear, not supporting the trade agreements, which is, I think, is huge considering the relationship that he has with Obama. But he's come out and he said, I'm not doing it. But what he is doing, he's saying, look, if you're going to go through with this anyway and it's going to happen and you're going to push for it, we got to help those workers. We got to help workers and companies that are going to be decimated by the closures and the job losses. We need to push through the Trade Adjustment Assistance Program. I learned something today, though. I thought the TAA was something in the 80s. I was wrong. The Trade Adjustment Assistance Program actually started in the early 60s as we began this globalization, as the auto industry started moving jobs overseas. And we started losing job after job to these foreign trade agreements. And what this does, this TAA does, is it makes sure that workers get help, getting some new job training, some new skills, and it also helps companies. It gives companies that are having trouble competing because of dumping or because of poverty, exploitative wages, it gives them some grants to help them compete. Helps prop them up. Republicans, they want their free trade agreements, but they don't want to help any of the workers because, oh, it's too expensive. Too expensive. But, Rick, it's too much. We're broke. We're just broke. Can't afford it. And I go back to my Gompers quote. You know, the man who has his millions will want everything he can lay his hands on and then raise his voice against the poor devil who wants 10 cents a day more. And that's what you're hearing, man. I got mine. The heck with you. And you know what they said? You know, the article said the program, the TAA, for all those years up until right now has always been a non-confrontational agreement. Everybody agreed until now. What has happened to this Republican Party? What has happened to these people that they would put their neighbors, their friends, their family, their countrymen in harm's way and their families? I'm just not getting it. Why they're willing to let this country go down, why they're holding this nation hostage is beyond me. I mean, is it pure greed? Is it pure self-absorbed narcissism? Is it pure political politic? My team over yours? What is it? 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425. Tell me, what is it? What do you think it is? We're right back after this.
This is why we fight. Why?
For the rest of us, Rick Smith.
Chances are, when you took a shower this morning, an AFSCME member made sure that water was clean. When you drove to work, an AFSCME member maintained the road. When you rode an elevator, an AFSCME member inspected it. I'm David Filman, Executive Director of AFSCME Council 13, the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. AFSCME members enforce regulations, keep prisoners behind bars, take care of patients, protect the environment, and more. The work isn't glamorous, the salaries aren't high, but AFSCME members serve the public in every aspect of our daily lives. Chances are, you'll never see that AFSCME member working in a sewage plant, diving underwater to repair a bridge, or answering a 911 call. But aren't you glad they do? For more information, visit AFSCME13.org. We are AFSCME.
We make transportation happen!
With a TSECU home equity line of credit, you can use the equity in your house to pay for things you want. Whether it's a trip to the beach, a new deck for fun summer parties, or a little consolidation to get your bills in order, we've got a rate so low, you'll want to raise the roof. A 3.25 annual percentage rate will fit into any budget. Additional rates and terms are available. Summer's a great time to start knocking off items on your to-do list. Replace the gutters that didn't survive the storms. Make over your kitchen with new paint and energy-efficient appliances. Or maybe it's time to add a deck so you can enjoy your staycation in style. We've got fast approvals, no appraisal or credit report fee, and no prepayment penalties. Financing light is what we do best, so talk with us. For additional rates and terms, call 800-LOAN-555 or go to pseCU.com/light.
This credit union is federally insured by the National Credit Union Administration, Equal Opportunity Lender.
The man who sends the investor class diving through their tax shelters. Rick Smith.
At every trough you stop to feed, with your arrogance, your ignorance, and greed. Now here come the cuts and redundancy. Through the absolute indifference, the avarice, incompetence, your arrogance, your ignorance, your greed.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Remember, check out the website at therickSmithShow.com. Also, you can email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. I do answer all emails personally. Well, tomorrow there is a big retreat in Vail, Colorado. It's this whole weekend, I guess. The Koch brothers are holding their biannual strategy session. It's where the, you know, all the top conservatives go, and they you know, they talk about how they're going to divvy up the country. People like Eric Cantor, the guy who, the majority leader of the House, who stormed out of the negotiations because it was such principle. He had such principle. It took him weeks to figure it out. It took him weeks to figure out how to stage the whole thing to get maximum political effectiveness. But he did it. And you're going to get all of the usual suspects there. The Tom Donahue's from the head of the hit squad over there at the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. You know, they had people like Glenn Beck and, you know, the whole conservative infrastructure, all of the things that the Koch money is paying for. And that's where they get their marching orders. That's when they figure out, and you know what's on the table. Understand what's on the table during this meeting. How do we kill Medicare? How do we turn that into a purely privatized system so that our private insurance companies that we benefit from because of the shares that we have in it, how we could get that Medicare money into private hands so that we could benefit from it? Not that we're going to provide health care to those people. We don't care about the rabble, the unwashed masses. We don't care about them, never have. They're a means to filling our pockets. Understand, they're going after Medicare. Medicaid's done. Understand, Medicaid's a done deal. That's gone. The Democrats I guarantee they've caved on that already. We're going to see that turned into block grants. Bet your bottom dollar. In fact, write it on a calendar right now that I said it, because I've said it before. It's done. We got to hold on to Medicare. And then Social Security. Because you know that's the big prize. That's the holy grail. That big pot of money that the gamblers can take to Wall Street, boy, that's the prize. If they can get that, they'll be satisfied for 10, 15 minutes at least. And then they'll want more blood, but still, they'll be satisfied for at least 15 minutes, I think. But that's what's on the table. And you've got some progressives who are going to be out there going to try and protest, but, you know, you're not going to be anywhere near where these guys are at, because the gates are so far back. They're in their gated world. And what I look at this, Jake, and I say, wake up, people. Wake up. These are the people who own this country. These are the owners of the country. These are the folks who have robbed and pillaged and stolen from you. And you're still defending them as the benevolent corporation.
And you can bet this meeting this weekend isn't going to get a lot of publicity. That's part of the problem. Way, way, way too often the press is very, very reticent to go after the very powerful.
They're all lazy. Too often. Call them what they are. They're lazy.
That too?
You know, I think of George Carlin.
They don't want a population of citizens capable of critical thinking. They don't want well-informed, well-educated people capable of critical thinking. They're not interested in that. That doesn't help them. That's against their interest. That's right. You know something? They don't want people who are smart enough to sit around the kitchen table and figure out how badly they're getting by a system that threw them overboard 30 years ago. They don't want that. You know what they want? They want obedient workers. Obedient workers. People who are just smart enough to run the machines and do the paperwork and just dumb enough to passively accept all these increasingly easier jobs with the lower pay, the longer hours, the reduced benefits, the end of overtime, and the vanishing pension that disappears the minute you go to collect it. And now they're coming for your Social Security money. They want your retirement money. They want it back so they can give it to their criminal friends on Wall Street. And you know something? They'll get it. They'll get it all from you sooner or later because they own this place. It's a big club, and you ain't in it. You and I are not in the big club.
And, you know, again, you know, the reality is he was right then as it is today. And, you know, I look back at that and I go, you know, what was that, some 20 years ago he said that? They knew. He knew. Again, they've been saying this for years. You know, you go back to the Bush years. Bush really didn't think, and the owners of this country knew Bush wasn't going to get Social Security. But they pushed it out there. They put it out there. And they moved the goalpost because the Democrats caved a little bit more. Just like Medicare is not going to go right now. Medicaid's done. Medicare is not going to go right now, but they've advanced their goal. Social Security is not going to be on Wall Street right now, but they've advanced their goal. We're moving further and further toward the radical right because they've got the money, they've got the infrastructure, and weekends like this where they bring all of their strategists together and they say, okay, here's your marching order, and they follow it. You look at the thing in Wisconsin. Scott Walker is a done man. He is a dead man walking politically. When 1 year comes up, he will be recalled. No question in my mind about it. He had to know that going into this. He had to know he was the sacrificial lamb. Had to know it. But they're going to reward him. They're going to make sure he's taken care of. They're going to make sure people like him are well cared for. Because they've advanced the goal. And it's weekends like this where they lay this stuff out and they say, well, we've got this 50-year goal. These people, though, these fabulously wealthy folks, they didn't get rich by being stupid and going, oh, we need to have it right now. No, we need a plan, a long-term plan. And they don't have a problem putting $1 billion or $2 billion into it.
You're exactly right, Rick. I remember... Because I lived through it. I'm a little bit older than you. I know that's hard to believe, Rick. But in the 70s, Ronald Reagan, and I can remember when he first came on the scene, I thought, my God, this guy is really going against the standard political grain. But you know what? In 72, he came on the scene and he eventually became governor in California. 76, he ran for president. And I thought, hey, no way. This guy is too far to... And you know what? He kept at it and at it and at it, and his ideas became more and more public, more and more accepted by the American people. Lo and behold, the great Reagan Revolution, which really was the beginning of this conservative movement, although today Ronald Reagan, the irony is Ronald Reagan would be too far to the middle and too liberal for these very, very conservative people. My point is, the Reagan Revolution didn't happen overnight. It happened over a period, well, at least 10 years, maybe more. And they put that seed out there. And they got enough money and enough groups to back it. And all of a sudden, those ideas are out there. And here we are today.
Well, the reality is that started in the 50s, where they wanted to go after and destroy, pretty much the whole New Deal. And they've done a very good job of that. They've done a remarkable job of destroying the New Deal. They've done a remarkable job of going after and taking back those gains that those working people that they fought for. And, you know, at the end of this, what has to happen is we've got to wake up. We've got to wake up to the realities that we're getting screwed in all this and that we'd better figure out how to, how to fight our way back. And we better figure out how to make sure that, there's a tomorrow for our children. And you know what's interesting? You bring up, this whole clairvoyance. You bring up this whole thing. Think back to 1954. Dwight David Eisenhower, president, Republican, last socialist Republican, writing to his brother. He wrote, quote, should any political party attempt to abolish Social Security, unemployment insurance, eliminate labor laws and farm programs, you would not hear from that party again in our political history. There is a tiny splinter group, of course, that believes you can do these things. Among them, a few Texas oil millionaires, an occasional politician or businessman from other neighbor areas. Their number is negligible, and they are stupid. Here we are, 60 years, 57 years later? You got him? Scott Perry, here, House Bill 916, screwing over unemployment. You got the little shrub running around, need to privatize Social Security. You got people all over the internet right now because of the NLRB. We need to do away with the NLRB. We need to do away with the labor, the Rail Labor Act. We need to do away with labor, all labor laws. Mission accomplished by a few Texas oilmen, an occasional politician, an occasional businessman. Mission accomplished.
And what did you have back then? Two very powerful things involved in the economy. One, you had labor unions that were just exploding. You had this economic explosion after World War II, the convergence of a war economy and stronger representation of working people. Another thing you had, and I remember as a child growing up, and when we talk about it, it brings back these memories, antitrust laws. And they were used, and they were used effectively. Where are they today?
Anyway, let's take a quick break. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. What do you think, stupid or not? Did it work? Mission accomplished? To the winner goes the spoils. What? Right back after this.
For the rest of us, Rick Smith.
Chances are, when you took a shower this morning, an AFSCME member made sure that water was clean. When you drove to work, an AFSCME member maintained the road. When you rode an elevator, an AFSCME member inspected it. I'm David Filman, Executive Director of AFSCME Council 13, the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. AFSCME members enforce regulations, keep prisoners behind bars, take care of patients, protect the environment, and more. The work isn't glamorous, the salaries aren't high, but AFSCME members serve the public in every aspect of our daily lives. Chances are, you'll never see that AFSCME member working in a sewage plant, diving underwater to repair a bridge, or answering a 911 call. But aren't you glad they do? For more information, visit AFSCME13.org. We are AFSCME.
We make everything happen!
With a PSECU home equity line of credit, you can use the equity in your house to pay for things you want. Whether it's a trip to the beach, a new deck for fun summer parties, or a little consolidation to get your bills in order, we've got our rates so low, you'll want to raise the roof. A 3.25 annual percentage rate will fit into any budget. Additional rates and terms are available. Summer's a great time to start knocking off items on your to-do list. Replace the gutters that didn't survive the storms. Make over your kitchen with new paint and energy-efficient appliances. Or maybe it's time to add a deck so you can enjoy your staycation in style. We've got fast approvals, no appraisal or credit report fee, and no prepayment penalties. Financing life is what we do best, so talk with us. For additional rates and terms, call 800-LOAN-555 or go to pseCU.com/life.
This credit union is federally insured by the National Credit Union Administration, Equal Opportunity Lender.
Bargain is the right that's fundamental about power to the people. That's where it should be. It's called justice. It's called democracy. So hear this, Skywalker, because your time is limited. Let us tell you what your big problem really is. It ain't your nagging, finger wagging, budget deficit. The problem lies with your moral deficit.
Madison, this is to the people in Madison. Don't give up the fight in Madison.
No, no, no. Yeah, that's the thing. Don't give up the fight. It's not just in Wisconsin. The spirit of Madison can be everywhere, right here in Harrisburg. And I'm waiting. I'm hoping that that voter ID bill they rammed through, I'm hoping that the disenfranchised, the angry, come to the Capitol. And you know what? Fill that hall. Raise their voice. Be angry. That's what I'm hoping for. So first, Scott Walker sets up this event. You know, he rams through this budget repair bill or whatever he wants to call it. First, he rams through his budget. The Republicans basically say, we're going to do what we want. The heck with you. Then he sets up an event to sign this destructive bill at a business of a convicted tax felon. So there's a great start to this whole thing. Walker's people were asked, you know, why'd you choose a location where the guy who runs the business is a convicted tax cheat? spokesperson says, well, gee, we didn't know anything about that. Told the press he hadn't looked into the details of this guy named DeCaster and his felonies. Then Walker cancels the event. And I'm sure, you know, they're going to end up having it in a place that's just as bad, maybe worse, maybe a rapist or a child molester, you know, maybe one of them. You know, you got to understand the circle that he runs in, the billionaire circle where they protect each other. Why don't you just have it at the Coke? Why not? Here we go. There's a great idea. Have it at the Coke retreat. So you can, you know, you can, mission accomplished. You can have it on display. See, we're screwing the people of Wisconsin. Here in Colorado, we're going to have the big ceremony. That's a good idea, don't you think? And maybe when Corbett sticks it to the people of Pennsylvania, he can do it at the Coke Ranch as well. Sounds like a great idea.
Move the facade, which is what it is. It's a facade acting like he's independent.
Yeah, independent, my. Here's some good news. Get ready because, you know, as we talked about last night, the TV stations are you know, all giddy, all tingly in the panties because the 2012 election is going to be gangbusters for TV revenue. It's going to set records from what they're saying. Now, understand, last year they spent $2.3 billion on television ads. They're thinking next year going to be in excess of $3 billion. I'm going to say it's going to probably be higher than three. It'll blow right through $3 billion. But the, you know, remember, the Supreme Court did this. They said, yes, corporations, you may have all the money, and you may then use all that money on television ads. So what they do is they give all this money to the American Crossroads Group, Karl Rove's group. They call them a conservative issue group. Evidently, they're going to start spending $20 million on ads hammering President Obama and his economic policies in states like Colorado, where the big shindig is, where the big Coke convention is, where they're going to divvy up the country. And, you know, there's nothing nefarious about it. They didn't try to hide it anymore. It's right out in your face. It's right there for you to, big pile for you to smell and get a good whiff of. They're running ads in Florida, Iowa, Missouri, Montana, Nebraska, North Carolina, New Mexico, Nevada, and Virginia because they think those are the states where they're going to get the biggest bang. Those are the states that are struggling mightily because of their policies, because of their hostage situation. And at the end of all this, you know, they're trying to say, well, you know, the president may have inherited this little hiccup. But his policies, you know, ran us into the ditch. It was his policies that did it. And I think people really need to realize the situation that Obama walked into. And listen, I'm as hard on him as anybody. I will beat up on him as much as anyone when he deserves it. But he walked into a hellstorm. He walked through the gates of hell. Our economy was plummeting. It was in free fall. We were losing hundreds of thousands of jobs a month. There was no end in sight. He did what was necessary to get things stabilized. And then moving forward. And all along, and he said, it's going to take time. We're going to have a sustained recovery. It's going to be slow. It's going to be painful. But we're going to get out of it. And every step of the way, what you had is you had these Republicans who, at every opportunity, have bashed him, have bashed these policies. And I go back to what Toomey said. If Toomey was in charge, we would have had a much harder down. So those months when we had 700,000 job loss, we'd have had a million. We'd have had 1.5 million. We would have seen the collapse go faster and farther and deeper down. The pain would have been greater. And there is part of me that says, you know what, that's what we needed. There's a part of me that says we needed that absolute collapse where nobody had anything else left to lose. Where we had 20-25% unemployment. Where people were just mulling around in the streets. Part of me says we needed that. But again, there's that Democratic part of me that says, you know what, I can't see that kind of mass suffering. Children shouldn't have to suffer like that. Families shouldn't have to be split up. Families shouldn't have to be destroyed. You know, I saw a story here in the area, in the county that I live in. There have been this year already 6 deaths because of domestic violence.
Mm-hmm.
6 murders because of domestic violence. And one last year, one the year before. Why is that? Everyone's going, gee, why is that? Why? Well, why? People are stressed out, man. People are struggling. People are having a tough time. And it's that stress. It's that constant, constant stress. Rick. 1-888-520-7425. What's on your mind? Big news. Big news. Sarah Palin. She's got a new documentary. Since she's not doing the bus tour anymore. Our quitter queen gave that up, and she's saying, no, I didn't quit. I just don't know when I'm going to do it again. And I don't know where I'm going to go. Not sure. Going to go to jury duty. He said duty. You know, she doesn't know, but she didn't quit, according to her. So if you don't know when you're going to start again and you don't know where you're going to go, I consider that quitting. So either way. But there's this documentary about her. I'm going, really? Somebody decided to make a quitter film? Good for you. I'm surprised it's not halfway done. See, that would have been the perfect honor to her if it was only halfway done. You got about halfway through. It's a 90-minute film. 90 minutes, 45 minutes, everything just stops, and then they roll credits for the next 45 minutes. That would have been, we got to do something like that. That would be a classic film. But there's a pro Palin documentary coming out. It's going to be opening in Iowa, and then it will be in New Hampshire, South Carolina, and Nevada before it gets the wider release to the rest of the lucky folks who may not hopefully have to see it. It's called The Undefeated, even though she got her hat handed to her. And well, she didn't lose. McCain lost. So maybe it's true. But, you know, this big film is coming out, and it's just basically going to be one big love fest. So I can tell you, I'm not going to watch it. Christine O'Donnell, like I said this week, promoting her book, Troublemaker, Let's Do What It Takes to Make America Great Again. It's almost as good as the Rick Santorum slogan. Fighting to make America, America, again. Like somehow we weren't America here for a while. And we haven't, you know, we're not us anymore. This isn't, you know, somehow they just picked us up and moved us away. Not get that. Anyway, the O'Donnell book should be very interesting. And I love the way St. Martin's Press described her book. You know, they said Troublemaker is about where O'Donnell comes from. The Philadelphia suburbs. With 5 kids in a room. And she's wearing a weathered, you know, she weathered the 2010 election. But this book is straightforward discussion that America yearns for, yearns to embrace freedom and opportunity through personal responsibility and how it has hamstrung and stymied by excessive regulation, taxation, and the sanctimony of the nanny state. Sounds like the RNC platform. Sounds like the every Republican talking point that's ever come out. Basically, maybe she, again, cut and paste. She basically cut and paste, and that's her book. I would love to ask the question whether she wrote it or not. Anyway, let's take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk about the big news coming up. Stick around. We're right back after this.
In an ocean of red. Rick Smith.
The Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. It took nearly a decade, but as Jesse Russell reports, employees of the Transportation Security Administration now have a collective voice on the job.
nearly 45,000 TSA employees across the country voted in favor of representation by the American Federation of Government Employees. 85% of the transportation security officers voted in favor of unionizing in April, but they didn't agree on which union should be the representative. The AFGE just barely nudged out the National Treasury Employees Union by 500 votes. President Barack Obama restored the right of TSA employees to collectively bargain when he took office, a right stripped by the previous administration. In a statement, AFGE National President John Gage said that as the union moves forward representing the workers, it acknowledges that airports of different sizes have very different issues. He pledged to cover all of the bases.
The United Farm Workers are hoping a California bill allowing farm workers to form unions by majority sign-up will soon become law. Sean Hamilton reports.
United Farm Workers and their supporters rallied at California's state capitol Thursday to persuade Governor Jerry Brown to sign legislation making it easier for farm workers to organize. The author of Senate Bill 104, Sacramento Democrat Daryl Steinberg, told the crowd he was honored to have sponsored the Fair Treatment for Farm Workers Act, which he referred to as a civil rights bill. Arturo Rodriguez, president of the United Farm Workers, said the large growers who oppose the legislation pretend everything is fine and that they treat the workers well. Rodriguez said they ignore the 16 heat-related deaths that have occurred in the last 6 years. He said the growers don't provide enough water, shade, or rest breaks and generally push the workers too hard.
They're not machines. They're human beings, and they cannot work like that. That's why we need fair treatment for farm workers and SB 104 signed by Governor Jerry Brown, so farm workers will have a voice on the job, so they'll have an opportunity to really control what's taking place.
Governor Brown has until June 28th to sign the bill. Sean Hamilton, Sacramento, California.
Pacifica Radio says it's riveting. This is what democracy looks like. Wisconsin's Worker Uprising is a one-hour documentary from Madison-based Workers Independent News. Get your copy today at laborradio.org. This newscast made possible in part through underwriting from the AFL-CIO. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Uncovering the con in conservatism. Rick Smith.
Well, I know that somewhere down inside they're just feeling small and scared. And they need to know that someone out there cares. Have you heard of Republicans today? Have you tried to spread your love to those who love the NRA? Though they might be quite reluctant because they'll wonder if you're gay.
Tell you exactly the Republican you should be hugging. His name's Stephen Saland. He is a Republican from New York. He's the guy. He's the guy. He's the guy the entire right wing is going to go after for the next couple of days, because in New York State, just a little bit ago, they have decided that they're going to allow same-sex marriage. The final tally in the Senate was 33 to 29, and in the House, 80 to 63, and the Democratic Governor Andrew Cuomo has promised to sign it. Earlier today, everyone knew that 31 votes were there. They were one shy of a majority, and our Republican friend, Stephen Saland, he voted against a similar bill 2 years ago. He told Associated Press he was going to vote for it. And that's when they forged onward. So there you go. All of the gay folks in New York can enjoy the same wonders of marriage as the heterosexual community. And I'm not sure what that is. But, hey, good for them.
Come on, let's be fair here. I mean, this is a big thing. Why? Because it gives them legal status. And when you're talking about coverage and health care and some other things which have a very dominant effect on our economic future. That's big stuff.
This just in. The Westboro Baptist Church has released a press report. God hates New York. There you go.
What are they going to do, boycott New York? Good luck.
I'd like them to boycott Pennsylvania, who they called the evilest state in the country.
You know, we talked about them several times. You know, and we talk about it, but I'm serious when I say that I am amazed that no one ever tried to kill them when they were protesting. I'm dead serious. I mean, if your son came back from Iraq and you have these nitwits, these crazy people over there just, in my mind, to a certain degree, desecrating the funeral of your dead child who gave his life for the country, I am surprised that someone didn't grab a gun and go after him, and I'm dead serious. I'm not advocating that. I'm just saying I'm surprised that somebody didn't try to end the lives of some of these crazy people.
Well, at the end of the day, man, it comes down to if it were me, and I've said this before, I would take those signs and give them a free roto-rooting.
you'd make a citizen out of them.
In an awful hurry. In an awful hurry. Anyway, the president was talking today, and you know, it's about jobs. He's saying, you know, we need to have a partnership between government, industry, and universities. And they need to design a way to find ways to get products from the drawing board to the marketplace quickly. He said, if we want a robust growing economy, we need a robust manufacturing sector. He was talking at the National Robotics Engineering Center at Carnegie Mellon University in Pittsburgh. He has dubbed the $500 million program AMP, Advanced Manufacturing Partnership, which is designed to create jobs. You know, he said, you know, you're proud of the fact that we're going to create some jobs. We need more manufacturing. We need more research and development. We need more, and I'm in favor of this. I'm in favor of universities doing this research. It's going to help the schools. It's going to help education. But at the end of the day, it's about reinvigorating domestic manufacturing. And wouldn't it be nice to build our own stuff again? Wouldn't it be nice at Christmas time you buy the toys that your kid actually uses? Wouldn't it be nice to build a high-speed rail right across this country? And I look at the New York Times article this week about China and how China is just kicking our ever-loving behinds because they are expanding at a mind-blowing pace. They are years ahead of where they said they wanted to be. They're way ahead of schedule. They've got work crews with as many as 100,000 people per line building these this 10,000-mile track that they're going to put across their country to put Beijing and Shanghai together. It's going to open next year. It was supposed to be completed in 2020, they're hoping to open a good portion of it before then. And you look at what's going on. They are just full steam ahead, to use a train metaphor. But, you know, again, this is what happens when you have policy and you have direction and you have a plan. We don't. We still believe in the invisible hand and the free market. Oh, the free market will give us rail. You know what the free market did to me today? The free market made sure I sat in traffic for 25 minutes because I don't have any other option. Where's my options? Oh, that's right. I don't have one. I have to drive my car to work because there's no other way of getting there.
Mm-hmm.
And then I had to sit there and burn gas, lots of it.
Yes.
And all the people around me, they're burning gas. You know, it would be nice to see a bullet train go pew, right on by, which is what they're doing. They're talking about speeds of up to 350 miles an hour. They're going to put 90 of these bullet trains between Beijing and Shanghai a day in each direction. I mean, it's just amazing. They're talking about trains that'll take less time, less than 5 hours to travel between Beijing and Shanghai, which is about the distance between New York and Atlanta. And you know what Amtrak takes? 18 hours. And we're talking about privatizing Amtrak and giving it to a profiteer who's going to let it collapse, who's going to suck every bit of profit out of it and not throw anything back into it. And then we go, oh, well, see, it didn't work. We're just going to give up on it. And you got President Obama who's talking about, well, we need to spend about $53 billion over the next 6 years so that we can build this train idea. And we can, you know, we can make sure that we get something. They're spending in China hundreds of billions of dollars because they understand they're going to need to move people and product. They're going to need to get the coal that they're now digging out of the ground to the place where they can use it instead of sending it to us or sending it over anywhere else. They're getting it. They're getting the idea that they need to do what we did in the 50s, which is build a transportation infrastructure. We are still living with a 1950s model. We've done very little to upgrade since then. I mean, we've added some new roads, done a little bit here and there, but the reality is it's the same basic idea, same basic concepts. We need new, upgraded, new technology. And you look at what happened last year when the Republicans took over in Florida, Ohio, and Wisconsin. Nope, we don't want to put in the rail. So there goes your national plan. There goes your national infrastructure. What if when Dwight David Eisenhower said, we're going to build a national highway system that's going to go straight across this country, if Illinois said, you know what, I don't know, you know, we may have to cut the grass around the road. I don't think I want to be responsible for that, so we don't want the road. What do you think would have happened? What do you think if, you know, if Kentucky said, yeah, gee, you know, it's going to mess up the grass. We've got this nice Kentucky bluegrass down here. We don't want to pave it over. Yeah, go around. That's what we got here, folks. We got the plan to connect cities up, the plan to move people around. You got states who are going, nope, sorry, ain't happening here. And we're competing against the Chinese. They are going to take, they're going to take over. Going to take over. They are building at such an amazing rate. And yet we're still talking what? Nothing. Nothing. But here's the thing, and what the article points out is, you know, China's got their capitalist problems as well. Because evidently, one of their former rail ministers, you know, a capitalist. Lowest bid gets the job. Lowest bid gets the job. And now they're questioning some of the strength of the concrete. Will the concrete last 20, 30, 40 years? We took the lowest bid. So as they move down the road, they're getting more like us. Because I look at the roads that were just finished a couple years ago, and they're already bumpy. I look at some of the bridges, they're already crumbling. Why? Lowest bid got the job.
Well, the truth is, Rick, I mean, they have. It's not like that China does not have rules. I mean, we say they are where we were 100 years ago. Ah, that may be true in some respects. They do have labor laws. They do have laws respecting, you know, the private contractors, however, all too often, to speed up the process, the government turns a blind eye. So, you know, when businesses, whether they're Chinese or American, you know, if you allow them to cheat, they're going to cheat. It's simple human nature. Yep. And by the way, this increased ability to move goods and services, you know, the projections that China might pass us within 5 years as the world's biggest industrial manufacturing nation.
You mean the biggest economy.
The biggest economy. They already did. I believe they did pass us as the world's biggest manufacturer.
The value-added manufacturer,
right.
Yes.
The world's biggest economy, that 5 years might be a little too. It could be less than that. At the rate their economy is expanding,
no. We shall see. But again, you know, they didn't beat us. We gave it to them. We're gonna take a quick break. Right back after this. 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425. Right back.
Uncovering the con in conservatism. Rick Smith.
Step right up, ladies and gentlemen, and get your ticket to see Rick the Wonder Worker. Texas Governor Rick Perry is less than revered back home, where he's widely ridiculed as Governor Goodhair. So he's now on the road with the traveling medicine show, billing himself as the Texas Miracle Man. From New York to New Orleans, he's wowing the Republican hardcore with astounding tales of his job-creating prowess, suggesting he can do for America what he's done for Texas. Hold it right there. First, while the Texas unemployment rate is 1% lower than the national rate, 23 other states are doing even better, including New York. Also, his self-touted record of job growth is essentially the same as Democratic Governor Ann Richards produced, only she didn't call hers a miracle. Most damning, however, is that Perry jobs are really jobettes, offering low pay, no benefits, and no upward mobility. In fact, under Reaganomics, Texas has added more minimum wage jobs than all other states combined. Indeed, Governor Perry presides over a state that has more people in poverty and more without health coverage than any other. Meanwhile, the Miracle Man has dug Texas into one of the deepest budget holes in the country, $27 billion short of the money needed to cover the same miserly level of state services Texans now get, even as our population has grown dramatically. Although his party controls the state Senate and has a supermajority in the House, he was unable to pass a budget in the regular legislative session, forcing him to convene a costly special session. Maybe that's why he's now on the road. This is Jim Hightower saying, toward the end of George W.'s right-wing presidency, national columnist Molly Ivan said, "Next time I tell you someone from Texas should not be elected president of the United States, please pay attention."
Hightower's commentaries are brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown, the monthly newsletter with Hightower's populist take on what the powers that be are up to. Find out more at HightowerLowdown.org.
Radio of, for, and by we the working people. The Rick Smith Show.
What the hell are we fighting for? Just surrender and it won't hurt at all. Just got time to say your prayers. While you're waiting for a hammer to fall.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Also, you can email me, Rick, at therickSmithShow.com. According to a Gallup poll, a good number of Americans, now 46%, disapprove of what's going on in Libya. 39% approve. And 15% said, you know what, I don't care one way or another, it doesn't affect me. They have no opinion. And I'm going, really, you have no opinion, none whatsoever, whether we should be bombing people or not? I mean, because that's really what it is. Should we be bombing people? Should we be killing people or not? No, I don't have an opinion. Leave me to my happy meal.
As a citizen, I guess my question is, above the fact that Obama may or may not have violated certain rules of law, as it concerns the President of the United States in war, what is our objective? Are we going to stay there until we get him out of office?
No, we're just playing with NATO.
Are we going to stay there another year, another 2 years? What are the ground rules? What are our objectives? I'm not so sure he's been declarative enough to the American people. What are our objectives? And what happens? Here's another question. What happens if we, in fact, depose him? What happens then?
We're building another nation. We got another Iraq. We've got another Afghanistan.
You know, I'm not defending Gaddafi. I mean, he's obviously a crazy man. No, I'm not. He's a crazy man.
Yes, you are. You want him in power.
He's done some evil things. Now, having said that, he and probably several dozen other world leaders, you know, we could put in the same basket.
But at the end of the day, are we going to be going around the world taking people out?
That's right. Are we going to nation build?
Yep. And the big question then becomes, if we're going to do that, what happens? And what's interesting is because of our wars, because of the fact that we've forced Afghans and Iraqis to flee their homes in great numbers, according to a recent UN High Commission for Refugee study, nearly one half of the world's refugees are from Afghanistan and Iraq, about 3.5 million and 1.67 million folks. So you're looking at almost 4 million people, these refugees from these two countries, trying to get away from us. And he says, but neither the United States nor much of the developed world bears the burden for the 10.5 million refugees under the purview of the global study there with the UN. Instead, Pakistan, Iran, and Syria serve as the top host countries. So what's going on is they're running away from our wars. People are running from us, and they're going to places like Iran and Pakistan and Syria, causing a bunch of unrest. And at the end of the day here, we'd better figure out what it is we're going to do. I've said from the very beginning, not in favor of this. I wasn't in favor of Afghanistan or Iraq either. But I need to know, why are we there? What's the objective? And today, Dennis Kucinich on the floor had this to say.
We've been in Afghanistan for 10 years at a cost of over $500 billion. In Iraq for 8 years at a long-term cost of at least $3 trillion. Those who told us the war in Libya would last days now want to extend it for another year at a total cost of billions. It is surreal that we could even be considering authorizing this war at a time when the government is collapsing in debt. Those who told us the war in Libya was to save civilians' lives quickly switched to regime change, with innocent civilians dying from NATO's bombs. Prior to NATO assuming responsibility, we launched hundreds of cruise missiles and dropped tons of bombs on Libya. Since NATO took over, the U.S. has struck from the air at least 90 times, including drone attacks. But these are not hostilities, claims the White House. So what business is it of Congress? We must put an end not only to the war in Libya, but we must put an end to the thinking that the Constitution is a doormat and that our constituents must simply bear the consequences of the misguided policies of this administration without this Congress having any say whatsoever. Defeat the authorization for the war, vote for the Rooney Bill, which limits the war, and when we return, let's vote for a total cutoff of funds for this wrong-headed adventure.
And I got to be honest, there's part of me that agree, and I agree with that. Unfortunately, it was shot down, as was the authorization vote was shot down. 70 Democrats voted against the president giving him the authorization. The vote today failed 295 to 123, and only eight Republicans supported the measure, which is kind of interesting to me. When you start and you look at this situation, with all of the war hawks on the right, you would think that this would be something that they would be in favor of. And there's part of me that says the only reason they're against it is because it's a Democrat in the White House. And you can't possibly be in favor of a Democrat being the war president. You know, they gave Bush the authority, and it didn't seem to matter that he got us into Iraq, lied us into that. And this is where I'm consistent. I am consistently against these kind of adventures, because what we're doing is we're stealing from my children. We're stealing from my grandmother. We're stealing from the future of this country. And for what? We still don't know. We still don't know who the good guys are or if they're good guys or bad guys. It's one of those things. You had a number of Democrats here in the state who did vote for it. Altmaier, Kritz, Schwartz, and Holden all voted for authorizing the continuation of this thing in Libya, as did the Republican Charlie Dent. So the rest of the congressional contingent here of the state voted against the president and against continuing the adventure there in Libya.
You're talking all those Democrats are moderate Democrats, so that's not really much of a surprise. If I can say one thing, I think you hit on it, Rick. I don't think some of the Republicans that are opposing the president on Libya have been consistent. They're asking, and they have every right in the world to ask the question as a member of Congress. They have every right in the world to question what the administration is doing and demand some answers. However, where were they in Iraq when George Bush was conducting his war? I didn't see any of the Republicans doing any of that towards the Bush administration. Maybe if they would have, maybe we wouldn't have got ourselves into the quagmire that we did get ourselves in.
Now look, here's the thing. I support this president. He's my president. I voted for him. A guy I support. I beat up on him when he deserves it, and this he deserves it on. This is not about Barack Obama. This is not. This is about who's going to be president next year, who's going to be president in the years to come. I don't want to continue down this path where every time there's a misadventure around the world, we have our people engaged in it, where we're footing the bill. It's our military who's bleeding and dying. I want it the way it's supposed to be. You got a problem? You want to go blow something up? You want to go kill people? You go in front of Congress. And Congress says, you know what? We'll fund that. Because, after all, that is the role of Congress. They, unfortunately for warmongers, they are the ones who say yay or nay. And I'm just saying, you know, and this is where my constitutional friends should be coming along. I say we follow the Constitution on this, which is very, very clear. Day before yesterday, House Minority Leader Nancy Pelosi, she expressed her disagreement with the administration's strategy for withdrawing troops from Afghanistan, and suggested that Congress take steps to bring the troops home sooner. And I'm with her on this. She said, quote, many of us would like to see this go faster than the path that was laid out. And I'm in 100% agreement. The quicker we can get out of there, the better. And here's the reason why. You know, you look at the reality, and Harmut Kazai, a guy who said, you know what, we really don't want you here. We would be happy to see you go. Karzai, you know, called them occupiers. At some point, you know, listen to the man. So he came out yesterday and said, you know, this drawdown thing, it's the right direction for the interests of both countries, as the preservation of this land is the job of the Afghans. But he said, you know, we may have some civil war and the Taliban encroachment and all that stuff. But he says, we'll do it. And what's interesting to me is while he admits that his forces aren't trained, his forces aren't equipped, he's still calling us occupiers. I'm just not getting that. It's amazing to me. But really, I mean, when you stop and you think about this, and McConnell kind of alluded to it the other day that, you know, well, maybe, you know, we shouldn't be so quick to be jumping on this. Maybe, and I look at this, and it's kind of like the gas thing. Obama has opened up some of the gas reserves, which I'm against. I'm against for the reason of lowering prices and increasing the supply of gasoline, just for that reason. Now, if the intent is to stick it to the speculators and make them lose a boatload of money, I'm all in favor of that. If you could do it on a global scale, well, everybody throws in and somebody they lose a boatload of money, I'm okay with that. But this idea of just trying to lower the price a couple of pennies, I don't know that that's smart. That strategic reserve is there for a reason. That's for when the spigot gets turned off. That's where if we have massive war, we can fuel our war machine. I'm not so thrilled about it. And again, you know, being very consistent, I was against it when Bush proposed it. When the Republicans kept throwing it out there saying, well, we need to get rid of the gas tax. We need to push out the reserves. I said, no, you hold on to that. You keep paying the gas tax. Sorry, we need those investments. What's interesting to me is how the right has kind of flipped, how politically things, just given who's in the White House, have gone back and forth. Remember, back when Bush was president, they were all for it. Now they're calling it stupid. Now they're saying, well, you know, we can't afford it. It's only going to lower the price 10 cents. Not going to do any good. And maybe, you know, there's part of me that looks at this and says, maybe it's going to screw those speculators over a little bit. They're going to lose a little bit of money over it. And who funds the right? Speculators. So maybe that's who they're defending. That's the only thing I can come up with. That's it. That's all I can come up with.
Well, I mean, let's be honest. Many of them just want to make the president look bad, whatever that means. They're willing to take almost any position they have to take to oppose this president. The ultimate aim is 2012.
Yeah. Anyway, let's take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk with Bob Nay from Talk Radio News Service. We're right back after this.
Together, we can make America better. The Rick Smith Show.
Chances are when you took a shower this morning, an AFSCME member made sure that water was clean. When you drove to work, an AFSCME member maintained the road. When you rode an elevator, an AFSCME member inspected it. I'm David Filman, Executive Director of AFSCME Council 13, the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. AFSCME members enforce regulations, keep prisoners behind bars, take care of patients, protect the environment, and more. The work isn't glamorous, the salaries aren't high, but AFSCME members serve the public in every aspect of our daily lives. Chances are, you'll never see that AFSCME member working in a sewage plant, diving underwater to repair a bridge, or answering a 911 call. But aren't you glad they do? For more information, visit AFSCME13.org. We are AFSCME.
We make everything happen!
Do you need a sign or promotional material for your business, campaign, or function? Then All Union Signs and Promos is the place for you. For years, All Union Signs and Promos has been serving South Central Pennsylvania with affordable, high-quality, union-made and American-made signs and promotional products. We want you to be seen. We set ourselves apart not only by being your one-stop, full-service sign shop, but also being able to tie that image into a full line of promotional products. Our dedicated staff will print, design, and deliver your most effective advertising tool on time and on budget. If you have a message, we have a sign. When you need your name on it, All Union Signs and Promos will do it with a memorable and unique union-made and American-made product. For more information about union-made and American-made products, visit our website at allunionsigns.com. That's allunionsigns.com. Or give us a call at 717-221-8888.
The most important issues of the day. This is the Rick Smith Show.
Show. Remember, check out the website at thericksmithshow.com now to find out what's going on in Washington, D.C. Our good friend Bob Ney, Talk Radio News Service. Bob, thanks for taking time for us.
How are you? Well, you know, Rick, a lot of drama in D.C. That's all I got to say, a lot of drama.
Well, you know, that is the, it is theater. And yesterday's play brought us a planned walkout. Everyone thought, oh, boy, they've been talking about it for weeks, I guess, huh?
Yeah, because, you know, when I was out there, you'll see temperatures rise, people storm out of places, but this one, they kind of got caught with the fact that a little bit leaked out, they've, you know, been planning some type of walkout at the point they don't like something. But, you know, Mitch McConnell, who's a Republican leader in the Senate, Harry Reid, ran over the White House, so they're still talking. But besides the stage and the drama, this is real serious stuff. They've got to come to some kind of agreement.
Yeah, we're at 39 days and counting until default day. Something had better be done because, you know, some of the folks I'm talking to, if we hit August 2nd, we could be talking global problems.
Sure, and then if we lose our platinum rating for the first time in nation's history, you throw in the gasoline prices and everything else going on, this could take a huge, fast, immediate tumble. You know, I mean, this is for real. This is pretty serious.
You know, as a Republican, I'm sure you've got maybe a different perspective as I do. I'm looking at this saying there's got to be some common sense ground. But when you've got one party who's entrenched in, we're not under any condition going to raise taxes, much like we have here in Pennsylvania because of Grover Norquist. Under no circumstances will we raise taxes. I don't know how you could begin to have a negotiation when one person has dug in so deeply.
I think both sides have to be willing to lay everything on the table. The Democratic side have to lay some things on the table it doesn't like, as the Republicans. Republicans struggle, too, because John Boehner, the Speaker of the House, has to cater to certain groups. When some of his own Republican members are saying, wait a minute, you know, there's a broad base out here. So they've got an internal problem, too. They've got an internal political problem, but it doesn't translate to good public policy.
No, not at all. I don't see how you can solve our debt problem, solve our problems going forward by all cuts. I'm sorry, just not seeing it.
It's, got to be imbalanced. This is monstrous and has to be approached, I think, in a reasonable fashion.
You know, if we're all in this together, we got to all be in together. So what else is going on in the big town there?
Well, you know, there was that, the marijuana legislation, recall that legalization of marijuana, but Marty Frank from Massachusetts, a Democratic member, and Ron Paul, we all know, who is an independent member, a Republican, he's a Libertarian, have introduced, which the Marijuana Coalition says is the first really broad-based bill to stop the prohibition of marijuana. They would make it legalized, regulated by the states and tax it.
I'm in favor of decriminalizing it. Allow people to use it if they want to. I'm not going to run out and do it, but I know people who do. And this would be a revenue stream.
Well, it's very interesting. You got Bernie Frank and you got Ron Paul. It's interesting bill because of the nature of the two guys and where they stand politically.
You know, you bring up Ron Paul, and then you know he takes a stance with Denis Kucinich today on the thing there in Libya. How did that go?
Well, Libya got weird. It's a schizophrenic bill. On one hand, the president didn't get what he wanted. He didn't get the one-year kind of open-ended. On the other hand, John Boehner didn't get what he wanted, which was to defund the whole movement. So I guess you could say, policy-wise, both the leaders, Boehner and the president, didn't get what they wanted. This was a real mixture. People were all over the place on this. I got to give Dennis Kucinich and Ron Paul both credit for at least forcing this issue out to the table.
And being consistent. I mean, this is something that in the past, I'm sure the hawks on the right would have been all behind had it not been this president.
Yeah, I was there when everybody was screaming, let's just go ahead and bomb Iran just in case.
Yeah, I mean,
it was a feeding frenzy.
Yeah, absolutely. Bob Ney, I appreciate the time. Always great talking
to you.
Have a great weekend.
You too, thanks.
Bob Ney, Talk Radio News Service. And what do you got for us tonight, Jake?
Yeah, Rick, from the Harrisburg Patriot News, some good news on the labor front. There's been a tentative agreement reached between Governor Tom Corbett's negotiations team and the Service Employees International Union 668. SEU represents about 10,000 state workers and has a current contract that expires June 30th. According to Kathy Jellison, who's SEIU's president, quote, after many long days and nights of difficult discussions, SEIU 668 and the Commonwealth have reached a tentative state contract agreement. We believe that the tentative agreement protects the interests of our members and the citizens of the Commonwealth. Now, both SEIU and AFSCME, who the day before came out with a tentative agreement, will now have to go back to their members, but it appears that both unions have done fairly well considering the economics, Rick, and that's good to know.
That is good.
Governor Walker, he's been the focal point of a lot of stories in this show, a lot of criticism. And here's another one to add to his long litany of sins against working people. When Governor Scott Walker signs his budget bill, he will put pen to paper in a ceremony at a business owned by a convicted tax evader, according to Think Progress.
Really?
Can you imagine that?
A convicted felon?
A convicted felon who, by the way, served 2 years in prison for it.
Really?
Now,
what have they done?
What have they done?
What has Scott Walker done? He can't possibly sign the bill at a convicted felon's place.
Well, guess what? Guess
what?
What
does he do?
He's going to do it.
He is?
Yes, he is.
That's kind of odd, because I just reported about an hour ago that he canceled that.
Oh, he did?
Yes.
Okay. Well, then he changed his mind.
He must have changed his mind.
Because of reports like this.
Evidently.
How about that?
What do you know?
How about that?
Yeah,
that's great.
I was guessing that he probably did it. He was probably going to do it at another business owner who may be a child molester or a rapist.
That's incredible that he would even think about it.
It is incredible. But, you know, the part of it is you never, and that's the circle that he runs in.
Wow. Well, just to give you an idea what's coming out of that budget, why we're critical. And by the way, that is good news. Sometimes the press does do its job, does it? And thanks for that information.
No, I don't know that it was the press that did it. I think it was the people of the community who said, wait a second, this guy's a felon. I think it was the workers in the area, the sheet metal workers, the M&I bank people, a whole bunch of people.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Well, the place where he was going to sign it was going to be Badger Sheet Metal Works.
Yes.
Maybe you got a little confused there. But
no, not confused. There's a union called the Sheet Metal Workers Union.
I understand.
They generally keep track of these things.
I understand.
And they were probably really outraged that a non-union sheet metal company would be the place, especially owned by a convicted felon, where the governor of that state would choose to sign one of the most destructive bills in the state's history.
Let me ask you something. Wouldn't his assistants be in charge of perhaps avoiding those embarrassments?
One would think, but again...
Or is he that arrogant he doesn't care?
No, but again, you're not hiring people who know what they're doing. It's cronyism. Oh. Remember the guy, he hired the guy to be in charge of the EPA who basically knew nothing. He was the son of somebody who, he was buddies with us. Sure, we'll give you the job.
Wow. Well, out of this, out of the budget crisis, came a report by Wisconsin Budget Project, which is a public interest group that watches budgets of their esteemed governor from time to time. And this is what they said. All the new tax cuts benefit corporations or wealthy Wisconsinites. However, two other changes in the budget bill will raise taxes for seniors. Surprise. And low-wage workers by $70 million over the next 2 years. Again, surprise. Also, by cutting the state earned income tax credit by $56 million and by ending indexing of the homestead tax credit, ending inflation adjustments to the homestead credit formula. That change will cost low-income Wisconsinites $13.6 million over the next 2 years, and that amount will grow steadily in the years ahead. As inflation, this is key, this sounds familiar, as inflation erodes the value of the credit. More and more injustices, and I think you're right about that governor, I think he is gone. But you can bet, and they're already talking about running him for president maybe in the future or something high profile. They will take care of him. No, initially they were, Rick. I mean, you can chuckle about it, but initially they were talking about him and, you know, the crazy man from New Jersey as, well, they're prime candidates to maybe we can run them for president or perhaps vice president.
But well, there you go. All right.
There we go.
All right.
Good news on the labor front. AT&T and Mobile merger would be major gains for worker rights. The proposed merger between AT&T and T-Mobile not only brings a wide range of benefits to consumers, but more important, it would bring benefits to T-Mobile workers who now face a complete atmosphere of fear and intimidation. There has been some criticism once this deal tentative, there was rumors about this tentative deal.
You mean the criticism? You mean
the criticism from the progressive community.
And people like me who think it's a bad idea?
Well, here's the other part of that. There's speculation that if they wouldn't have gone with T-Mobile, they might have T-Mobile and AT&T would not have merged, or the tentative proposal wouldn't have come about. They could have gone with Sprint. Now Sprint is notorious. It's even worse than T-Mobile. So as far as workers' rights, that would have been a disaster. And here's the thing: it'll bring about 20,000 of those T-Mobile workers into a work situation where they'll have union representation. So that's a good thing.
It's a good thing for the workers on the short
Absolutely.
Term. Yes, I agree.
Absolutely.
As far as the whole consumer thing, I don't see it. I'm not seeing the more choice. I'm not seeing the more competitiveness.
Well,
I'm not in favor of the whole this whole consolidation.
I understand what you're saying, but can I say this? We're looking. The CWA was looking at it from a little different perspective. They made some comments. Their head man made some comments before the Federal Communications Commission in FCC filings, and this is what they said. This agreement will expand high-speed broadband deployment to 97% of Americans. It will help close the digital divide. It will improve the quality of service received by AT&T and T-Mobile customers. It will enhance economic growth, especially in rural areas, which is important, and it'll create tens of thousands of jobs and bolster workers' rights. So there are some positive out of it.
I disagree.
Well, you know, we don't live in a perfect world.
As far as the the workers are going, that's good. I'm in favor of it. Here's my problem. 41% of the T-Mobile stores are within a mile of the AT&T stores. I don't think you're going to see the job gains that you're thinking. Just my thoughts.
Well, we shall see. Pennsylvania House Appropriations Committee has moved bills that will provide funding to Penn State, Pitt, Temple, and Lincoln. And again, some of the cuts of the funding for education. Some of that money has been given back, but these universities are still facing some real, real tough cuts. And that's going to reflect in higher tuition in all these state universities. And again, according to what I read, and this surprised me, Rick, Penn State is one of the highest tuition state-supported schools in the country, which I was surprised.
Not me. Last I talked to a bunch of people who go there. They're in the 20s. They're in the mid-20s.
Well, that's going to go up another, probably 10-15%.
Well, maybe people start rioting in the streets. I don't know. Anyway, let's take a quick break. When we come back, we'll wrap things up. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
America. Rick Smith.
My name is Joanna, and my job is to protect children, to help them live in safe and stable families. I work for you, the taxpayers, in Children and Youth Services. Every day, I help children and families in crisis. Many parents have lost their jobs, making it harder to keep a roof overhead, food on the table, and stress under control. My caseloads are huge, and waiting lists for critical services are too long. Yet I know the safety of these children depends on me. Even in tough economic times, legislators must fund these vital programs. Because if we don't help these kids now, the cost to them and to us will be much higher later on. Children don't only depend on me doing my job, they're counting on you to care about their safety. Contact your state legislators today. Demand that they invest in programs that prevent and treat child abuse. Because a child in pain shouldn't have to wait.
Brought to you by SEIU Local 668. Visit our website at SEIU668.org and join our human services campaign.
That old washer or dryer on the fritz and you don't have the bucks for a new one? Call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211. You say that old refrigerator isn't refrigerating so well. Call Mike at Klein's, 243-3211. How about a bunch of money to replace your old stove or microwave? Again, save the cost of a new one. Just call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Here at the radio station, we call Mike our resident mechanical and electronics genius. Have you ever met someone who can literally fix anything? That's Mike.
Call him at 243-3211.
You'd be amazed to learn how well many of the older appliances were made. A simple repair might give you another 5, 10, or even 20 years of service from that old washer, dryer, stove, or refrigerator at a fraction of the cost of a new one. Mike repairs TVs and electronics, too.
So call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Let Mike fix it right, and you pocket the savings.
That's 243-3211 for Mike at Klein's Appliances Repair Service.
Gonna go to work, but then I got I just got a new promotion, but I got now I'm selling dope, and I know why. Because I got
That's just wrong. Wait, why are you playing that? Oh, you gotta love the Timmy song. And we've got a Timmy. He's running for president, Tim Pawlenty. I can't wait. I can't wait till the whole, we start really getting into the heat of things. Cause if you look at these tax plans that the right keeps throwing out, I'm gonna cut, taxes down to 9%. I'm gonna cut taxes down to 5%. I'm gonna just cut them all out. We don't need revenue. Cause somehow the Republicans have figured this out. They have figured out how to defy the laws of gravity. They have figured out how to defy the laws of the checkbook. They have figured out how to balance their budget by not bringing in any revenue. They have figured out how to pay their bills, balance the budget, support a military, support their themselves without bringing in any revenue. It's amazing to me. Absolutely amazing. You gotta love it. Anyway, a couple of quick stories that I found interesting. The U.S. Food and Drug Administration, they have issued a 63-page report. I cannot believe they came up with 63 pages that concluded silicone breast implants are mostly safe. Mostly safe. In spite of what they are saying is a higher incidence of complications than the saline implants. So they're, you know, for the most part, silicone, it's okay. Yeah, well, you know. They have some leak problems, some infection problems, you know, some lymphoma problems. Yeah, you know, but hey, you looked good. You're going to look good in the box. So there you go. Mostly safe. I love that. For those of you who are into Botox, take this as a lesson. Anyone contemplating Botox treatment for excessive sweating, let me say that again. Anyone contemplating Botox treatments for excessive sweating may want to consider the case of this 17-year-old girl who was a texting fiend. She suffered from sweaty palms. So she went to the doctor and they injected her with Botox in her hands. Now she can't text. No more texts for this young girl. So I think I figured out, instead of passing a law, no more texting, just carry around a syringe of Botox. I mean, really, have we become that bizarre of a society? My palms sweat. I need to shoot them up with a dangerous chemical so my palms don't sweat. What kind of a society have we become? I mean, really. I mean, it was bad enough when we were shooting Botox into our face and into our behinds and God knows where else. Now we're shooting it in our hands because my hands are sweaty. I've got sweaty palms. You know, when I was a kid, the only thing we ever worried about were hairy palms. You know, this girl's got sweaty palms. What a bizarre world we have become. What a bizarre place. Anyway, some good news. You know, I love Florida. I really love Florida because that's where the crazy people live, or a good number of them. Bonita Springs, Florida. Florida authorities, according to the UPI, report that a young woman who was giving massages to this undercover police officer. She was doing it topless. And I don't know that there's anything wrong with that. But then she tried to arrange for a little happy ending, I guess. And she was arrested. Turns out she's the daughter of a retired Lee County deputy sheriff person. So they arrested her, the 24-year-old girl. Well, I'm looking, I'm going, you know, hey. Yeah, the guy paid $160, so she can strip down to her panties and begin the massage on her. And, well, you know, she offered her a little of this, little of that. And I'm like, what harm could it be? None of my business. Also in Florida, gotta love Florida. Again, I do. It's where the crazy people live. I don't know what we would do. I don't know what I would do for stories without Florida. According to UPI, Florida police arrested a pantless manager of a Christian radio station. That's right, he didn't have any pants on. Driving around in his car with no pants on. He pulls up next to two females, 115, 123, and he said, hey, honey, where's the nude beach? They arrested him and put him in jail. And I look at this, I'm going, you know, and the more I look at this, the more I go, yeah, you look at these people who run these Christian outfits, they've got some serious problems. I mean, you know, just driving around with your drawers down? Gotta wonder. Maybe it's a Florida thing. I don't know. Maybe it was hot that day. That would be a good defense. It was hot that day. I, you know, felt a little sweaty, dropped my drawers. Nuts, don't you think? And a nice story from California. A woman said that her puppy had fallen down a sewer drain. Yeah, she was down, a little puppy, cute little puppy. You gotta see the video. They called Roto-Rooter, and the Roto-Rooter people came out and rescued the little puppy, and everyone was very happy. Basically, they took a pipe and pushed his little behind right out the other side. Moral of the story, don't let your little puppy run down the drain. I would wonder what the bill is going to be on something like that. I know I wouldn't want to pay it. Phillipsburg, Pennsylvania. A Pennsylvania woman who moved out of her house because of a divorce evidently didn't think she was going to have the grass cut, so the city came and did it for her.
I saw that.
$650. And I'm going, how do I get a gig like that? I'll cut her grass. I'll use scissors. It'll be the best mowed grass on the block. $650. Wow. And I get these, I always get these requests for guests. Like, you know, these companies send me people, say, hey, you know, interview this person. Hey, interview this person. Well, they sent me this Christine Manley person. You know what her specialty is? She develops resumes for children. And I'm going, have we gone that far backwards that now we're developing resumes for children? Her Creating Child Power on Paper is a document that could benefit young children. Children take part in so many activities, but most of these activities are not documented. To many parents, they wait until their child are in need of a resume, and then they panic because they don't remember. They don't remember all the activities. And these kids, they participate in so many things. So we evidently need resumes for children. And there's actually somebody that they sent me to come and talk to you about resumes for children, and I'm curious. Send me an email, rick@thericksmithshow.com, because I do love bringing interesting guests. Are you interested in a woman who tells you how to make a resume for your two-year-old? I don't know that I am. But if you are, rick@thericksmithshow.com, I would love the input, because I think it's just plain nuts. As if we don't have enough problems. And the last thing I want to get into, yesterday we talked about the most powerful man in Pennsylvania. His name is Grover Norquist. He is the head honcho over at the Americans for Tax Reform. Made all of the, you know, got all these people to ignorantly sign these bizarre anti-tax pledges, you know, like our governor. He has now gone back, reviewed his ruling. Yesterday he said that this fee imposed on hospitals was indeed a tax and would break the pledge. Well, he has kind of turned around. He is now calling the proposed hospital state assessment not a new tax. It does not. It's not a pledge breaker. It's not going to harm you with our voters. So feel free to stick it to those working people who will have to pay the assessment tax through higher health care costs. So, hey, good stuff. So now maybe we can have a budget. On Sunday, the representatives, the senators are back. The budget is going to get rammed through. We will know on Monday how badly we're going to be getting it. So I look forward to Monday night because we're going to be talking about the budget. Hope everyone has a great weekend. This has been an interesting week. Again, congratulations. You have lost your right to vote, poor people. Old people, you too. 4 million people in this state are going to get screwed. You just watch. It's infuriating. Have a great weekend. We will see you back here on Monday to keep up the fight. Have a great weekend.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Together, we can make America better. Email rick@thericksmithshow.com or interact with us anytime at thericksmithshow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show.
1.5% solution of cocaine was the answer to alcoholism.
I think so. Isn't that where the Sherlock Holmes thing comes from, too? Oh, I've lost Fancy. We are at the end of the program. Let me thank the five of you who stepped forward and filled 25 of the needed 50 slots in the Thrifty 250. Thank you very much. As I noted, we have massive bills to pay before I get out of here to go and deal with Prism and hopefully bring that to the Horn family over the next 3 weeks. I'll be back on Monday. thanks to everybody who makes all of this go, beginning with those of you who contribute to make sure that we're here from night to night, and to everybody behind the scenes, on the scene, Lottie in the chat room, Gene and Susan, our news ninjas, our blogger Texas Betsy. Thanks to John Fox, our chief engineer. He and I have a bunch of work to do in the next few days. I'll tell you more about that maybe later.